Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Rhyme Along, and you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Kurt Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome in. 16th of August, 2010, you are in the net live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. This is normally the part where I talk about keeping the applause going and bring it on, and we get all excited and pumped for our show. But many of you know what has gone on over the past week has definitely put a damper on our view of volleyball and perhaps the future of beach volleyball here in the United States. We will jump right into it here. No weekly volley, no what I did last weekend and how much motocross I watched. We need to talk about the AVP. Coming up on Friday, we knew the drop-dead date was last week. It had been pushed off from the week before. And Friday afternoon, after a lengthy conference call, the announcement was made that the AVP is, in fact, folding up shop. They are no longer. They've gone bankrupt, laid off all of their workers, and who knows where it goes from there. Dan Madden now joining us in the show, and Chris Geeter-McGee here in the home court, along with Millie and my two kids. So it's a full home court. But Dan Madden, you were on the conference call. You were listening in.
Yeah, I was on. I was on mute. I don't really have anything to say, you know, while on that call. But yeah, so Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock California time, Al Lau gets on the conference call. Al Lau's a player rep for AVP.
Has been for a long time.
Yeah. Al's one of the very nice guy. And it took a lot of courage to get on that call because there's a lot of people listening. And, you know, and everyone knew that AVP was trying to make a deal all the way up to, you know, into Friday, and 4 o'clock comes, and Al just says, and has to repeat it because people are popping in after every minute or so, and he says, AVP is suspending operations for the 2010 season, and which was kind of a nice way, and it kind of came out later, you know, they're done. You know, they're going bankrupt, and a lot of people had a lot of questions, and that was when, like, a lot of people knew that it was going to happen.
Right.
But it was like listening to Al say that, you know, 2-3 times in a 10-15 minute span. That's just like, man, this is real. And it was really sad. It was really sad for me. And I'm sitting there at work with Lindsay Breeden, who's been on the show. He's a volleyball guy. And we're just like, this is really happening. And it was this surreal, bad moment.
Well, you mentioned a lot of the questions that people have, and we want to let you know on the show today that we are going to endeavor to answer some of those questions, not only the opinion from Dan, from Chris, who's deeply involved with the AVP, from myself, who have watched the collapse, but we also have CEO Jason Hodel is going to join us right around 11 o'clock. We're going to talk to him about exactly what went down, how things were all through the final few weeks, and really how the tour was set up to fail throughout the last month or so. We're going to have head coach Jim McLaughlin from the University of Washington. He's going to join us to talk about our upcoming college stuff. And we're going to have Rachel Scott and Jake Gibb are expected to call in, and hopefully some other players are going to call in and talk to us about what has gone on. So we kind of have a two-part show. We've got the AVP, got a little bit of college volleyball as we have that coming up, but we want to talk mainly AVP. Chris?
It's been obviously a rough 3 weeks for me and my family on a lot of levels. When I first found out that the AVP was going through these troubles and that we needed to raise the $4 million or so dollars that it was going to take to save the season, and we had about 24 days to do it. Obviously, I was very involved in trying to find out as much information as I could, and at the same time trying to get my ducks in the row for my own professional career.
That to me is astounding.
Yeah.
24 days, $4
million. Well, I when the AVP found out, and when I say the AVP, I mean the board, Jason Hodel, Kanan Seaman, Mike Dodd, when they found out that RJSM was not going to fund the rest of the year.
RJSM, the owner, the managing partner,
Nick Lewin.
Nick Lewin, the head of that.
Yeah, when that was not going to happen, and sales weren't catching up to what we needed. We have all these contracts that we have to fulfill. our biggest events, that we need to find an investor to come in within a couple weeks, basically, and do it. And, you know, every day I was checking in, and I would check with Canyon and Jason and Mike and Mark Werschel over there, the executive producer. He's, you know, turned into one of my best friends. So we were, you know, nonstop trying to figure it out. We were going ahead with everything. We were planning a Manhattan Open, Mark and I. We were getting ready to produce a show. We were doing all of our content. So we had to kind of charge on like it was going to happen, because we were remaining positive. I think what everyone found out was that there were people really interested, smart people,
yeah,
with money that loved the sport, people that don't know anything about the sport that were interested. There were heavy hitters involved, and it got close on a numerous you know, occasions. I think maybe Jason will talk about that, but I think the final blow was a couple of days before the deadline. There was a group with real interest, and ironically, their technical advisor on that group was Kent Steffes. So Kent was in the meeting, and that group was close. I think the bottom line, to come up with that much money that quickly, is very difficult.
And, it seems all but impossible even in a good economy. Here you're in a bad economy, and you're expecting to court,
yeah,
someone, have them sign, and have them put up $4 million inside of a month.
And I think, guys, at the end of the day, the guys that would come in, the numbers guys, that don't know our sport and love our sport, at the end of the day, we're saying, we don't want to put this much money in just to save your past. We'd rather get you out of bankruptcy, because we think there's value here. Now, for us, we're saying there is value in keeping your tour alive. There is value in going to Chicago, Manhattan, Hermosa, in Cincinnati, in San Francisco, and finishing strong and keeping your sponsors happy. You know, I see the value in that. The AVP fans see the value in that. The players sure see the value in that. But I think at the end of the day, they just couldn't get a deal done quickly. There wasn't enough time. So I got the final word. Nick Lewin called me the day of, and I had found out the night before that the Kent Steffes deal, that the group he was working with, was dead. But Nick Lewin called and said, I just wanted you to hear it from me. We tried, and you know, there's going to be no deal, hopefully. And, you know, I just said thanks and hung up. And basically from that point on was contacting some friends of mine that I was close with. My wife and I had talked. You know, I've met with my agent. I've called every contact I have. I've, you know, worked on my own little career, you know, to get it going, you know, with Fox and ESPN. And at the same time, having a heavy heart, because there's people I love and people I've grown close with and that I'm really good friends with that I know are out of work. You know, for me, my family's benefits end now on the 30th. My last paycheck was the 15th. So it's time to really move forward. At the same time, I believe in my heart that the AVP can come back. I believe that the model definitely needs to change, and that's what I want to ask Jason. You know, what is wrong with the model? I feel like we were going in the right spot. I feel like we were cutting costs and getting it down to manageable, but our sales never caught up.
So you feel like it was headed the right direction, might have survived if it had a little deeper pockets.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Dan always makes the point about no stadium. Maybe that's the next move. You know, you take away those stadiums and you save whatever money that is. But, you know, I think there is some interest out there. There absolutely is for the AVP. And I do believe somewhere in my heart that it'll come back, but I don't know if it's going to be too late, and I don't know if we can revive it again for a third time.
How did this happen? How do we think this happened? I mean, you started the season. It was in question. I remember we talked to Jason Hodel. I went back and listened to our interview with him back in October. He said there were several large companies, half a dozen large companies, interested in the AVP Tour. Yet nothing was announced with Nivea until all the way in May, even though he was expecting that to happen by Thanksgiving, the following month in November. Nothing happened until May. They announced a 12-tournament schedule just before that was to begin, sometime, what, late March, early April, before that schedule even came out, and it had some to-be-determined dates on it. How did this all occur? Is it disorganization in the office? Is it the climate? Is it – what is it? What is it, a combination of those things? Is it the ownership group not being organized? You had a tournament that was supposed to be in Malibu that no one applied for permits, so you end up in Long Beach. There's a lot of different errors here that I wonder who's to blame for this collapse, and how did this really come about?
There's one thing that I think had a big role, but it's a catch-22, and it's that ESPN deal, ESPN ABC deal, which cost AVP about in the tune of $4 million.
Half that was Geeter's salary.
Well, I don't know if that includes production. That might just be airtime.
There's the time button. Yeah,
but
okay.
I don't know. But that's why Nivea was on board, and that's what Hodel says time after time.
Right.
We wouldn't have gotten Nivea if we didn't get that TV time. So there's the catch 22, and that's the whole problem with the business plan, like, or with going old school. Can you get those sponsors without going television? What do you do? How do you do this?
Well, my question is, does the Nivea money offset the television contract? Is that even a zero? Because we know from Hodel, again, via our interview, that the hole left by Crocs was $6 million every year. $6 million. That's a huge hole in the budget of this company currently. And you wonder if Nivea needs that exposure. Does Nivea pay enough to even pay that bill? Do they pay the $2 million or the $4 million or whatever it may cost to get on ESPN ABC? Well, I don't know. I don't know if Hodel can share that with us.
That's what we need to find out, because I think that is a big part of what our ultimate fall was, you know, operationally, TV-wise, where we tried to go. But I think someone hit on this earlier. I think at the end of the day, and I don't know if that's Coglave on the chat board or not, but like the AVP knew that this was coming.
Yeah.
I think we believed that if sales didn't catch up, that RJSM was funding the rest of that to get us through the year. I think that's what the higher-ups and management believed. I know the players believe that. I don't know the ins and outs of it because I didn't sit down with Nick and talk to him about that, but I know Canyon and Jason, I know the players did.
Well, we're going to get back to RJSM here shortly. I'm gonna have a few words for RJSM and what's been going on with them. But I want to make a point here. The question becomes, are you national or are you local? Because if you want a national TV contract, you want a big sponsor like Nivea, okay, you're national. You have to do the things that make you national. You have to spend the money to have a national visibility. But if you're local, then you're more of a local event. You can use smaller companies, local companies, different sponsors. You don't need the TV for those sponsors. Those people are looking to touch the people at your event, not the national television audience. So I think the tour needs to ask itself, which one are they? Are they local in a lot of different spots and maybe some of the satellite events like we've talked about in previous shows where it's one-offs? Or are you a national tour and trying to continue with that national professional tour? And we really have to call into question here, is that national professional beach tour truly viable, having had it go out of business once again?
I think I want it to be national because I see the value in TV and I believe our sport should be on TV. Now, what package? We need to find the right one, whether it's a regional FSN and NBC, whether it's a versus. ESPN and ABC was phenomenal for us, but at the end of the day, costs a lot of money, and unless you have that money, what's it going to do for you? Unless they're going to partner up with you at the end of the day, but you got to be on there for a couple of years, and they have to see your value first, and I don't think they got a chance. They loved our sport. I saw the emails.
Yeah.
I saw the emails to our producer. You know, they thought we were a perfect fit for them. But we didn't have the money to pay them.
This is ESPN.
Yeah, ESPN.
But here's the thing. As much as they love you or the emails are great, I never saw AVP on SportsCenter. That is the property that ESPN drives. Everything else they do with is SportsCenter. Because people tune in for a lot of different sports to SportsCenter, and that exposes them to new properties. That's why the X Games gets featured on SportsCenter, because they're trying to pump their own property. So I felt like ESPN never really adopted the AVP as one of their properties. You never saw the final.
Absolutely
point.
Not. I mean,
didn't
did we even have a time?
Seconds.
Did we have time ever? I mean, we were only there for a couple months.
No, but if it's on there, there should be a few highlights, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've always thought there should be.
Hit the finals, hit the last point, show the ball, show the results. End of story. It takes about 15 seconds, and it's important. All that time is extremely important on SportsCenter. But if it's one of their properties they believed in and wanted to grow, I think I would have seen it.
Well, I think that's not up to them. That's up to us. That's up to the volleyball community to make it bigger than it is. You know, I mean, are volleyball players watching SportsCenter?
Absolutely.
Are volleyball fans
absolutely.
Are enough?
But not
are
for volleyball.
Enough? Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I was talking with Hans. I talked to Hans for a while last night.
Hans Stolfus works for the AVP blogger.
By the way, he mentioned both your names in the article.
Did you know?
Yeah, and I got a faux quote. Something I didn't say but may have sort of alluded to.
Well, it's a paraphrase.
A paraphrase.
Yeah.
At least you guys got in that article.
Hey, yeah. If
13 years, I couldn't even get in the final article.
It said the Net Live. That included you.
Does that include me?
You backdoored your way in.
Well, anyway, so I talked to Hans. I love talking to Hans. And he mentioned, I didn't know this until last night, KTLA, LA's, what is KTLA? Explain.
It's a local television station
here in Los Angeles. Yeah. Say we're going to do four of our events.
apparently they're the only broadcast that has ever paid AVP.
Yeah, they were paying us this year to be on
the only
air.
Time it's ever happened.
How about that?
AVP's had to pay every time in the past, except for that. So he's saying, is it that hard to find local broadcast stations like that to pay us, you know, whatever sum it is? It's not us being in the negative, it's us just paying, there's us getting a little bit of money to be on these regional stations. Is that bad? I mean, I always go back to when I was a kid, and when I was a kid, I'd watch it on MSG, Madison Square Gardens Network, in New Jersey, and I could watch it all the time, which was great. It wasn't on ESPN. It didn't have to be on ESPN.
No, and it was on Prime Ticket here in the Southern California area around that same time.
Prime Ticket and MSG were working together for that. Yeah, exactly. Okay. It was Prime Ticket. So my question also is, and Geeter might know, this is as far as ratings, were the ratings any better than they were on Fox Sports?
The ratings were right up there with the MLS, who they back and support and put on SportsCenter and
show
pay
highlights,
for.
Yeah.
Right,
really?
With them. Yeah, absolutely.
When is
I don't have exact numbers, but yeah. I mean, I know we did some 0.6s and stuff like that.
I've said it before. We,
you know, it's in 500,000 to 750,000 homes.
We need Anschutz. Volleyball needs Anschutz.
What is that?
Philip Anschutz. He's the reason MLS exists. He's a billionaire.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he funded the whole league. And we've said it before on this program that you need that sort of angel investor who's going to put the money in necessary up front to make the sport big, whether that's beach or indoor. Or big again if it's beach, I guess.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a collapse with real-world implications for a lot of people. Geeter, you're one of them. Certainly, the fans is one thing, but people who work it and do it, and the players who play.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
It's amazing. It's going to affect a lot of people, and we want to talk to one of those people right now. We have on the line Jake Gibb, one of the great players in the game today. Jake, thanks for joining us here on the Net Live. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, Jake.
Hey, we know Friday was a dark day. Give us your immediate reaction to what went down.
Well, I was on the conference call. I was just kind of in shock. I heard, you know, out loud just, we had all kind of heard rumors. But in my mind, I always thought that the AVP would pull through. You know, for the last, my whole career, it's always been like, oh, the AVP is struggling. There's questions on whether, you know, this is going to, if the tour is going to succeed. They've always just kind of pulled it out. And for me to hear it, that it came to, you know, fruition, that it was a reality, that, hey, there's no U.S. tour, I was just absolutely knocked off my feet. So I was sitting there listening, and I heard some of the players kind of speak, you know, ask questions. It was a big conference call of all the players, and you have the player rep, Al Lau. And some of the players were kind of aloof, almost, you know, just kind of, you know, had some jokes about it. Just, oh, Al, you're going to come join us in Turks and Caicos now. And kind of some people chuckled. And I was sitting there and I was like, what is going on right now? And so then I just was super disheartened and bummed, you know. And maybe what I realized from that is that some of the players, this is kind of a part-time gig for them anyway, and so it wasn't that hard of a blow. But now, did I hear you guys were talking to John Heiden?
We were trying to, but we don't have confirmation of being able to talk to John, no.
Oh, okay, sorry. Well, yeah, and then I think maybe I took it harder just because this is my gig. This is my, you know, this is my full-time job, and so. For me, it was really hard to hear, and I'm bummed, man. I mean, that's the only word I can think of right now. I'm really,
you know, Jake,
really bummed.
Hey, Jake, this is Geeter. You know, you and I are in the same boat because we put a lot of our lives into this, and as you said, it's our bread and butter. And, you know, there have been some people that have been aloof or don't really know the severity of this, you know. I mean, there's so many...
Yeah.
And you know them. There's so many people that have full-time jobs around this. People in the office that the outside world has no idea that work countless hours to keep this tour afloat. And people will say, well, Jake Gibbs and Kerry and Phil and Todd, those guys can just go live overseas and play in the FAVB. No big deal. That's not it. You guys have sponsorships here. You get to play in front of your families. You need a strong domestic tour for us to survive. You can't just go live in Europe for 6 weeks. I mean, for 6 months.
Yeah, the domestic tour... I'll tell you what. All my sponsors, they care about the AVP. They care about TV time. They care about exposure in the U.S. I mean, all the way down through, you know, from Rockstar to Vole to Wilson, my old sponsor Speedo. That's what they care about. That's what's in my contracts with them. Is hey, this your TV time is what's important to them, and this is what we will pay you. You know, I have incentives based on my U.S. performance. You know, for them, the World Tour is more about the Olympics. Okay, well, we want you to do well there because we want to see you in the Olympics. But the U.S. Tour, I mean, drives a ton of, I mean, the majority of my income. So, yeah, it's a big deal. And I think you're right, Geeter. I think the people that are most affected are the, you know, say the top 10 teams on the AVP that are making a full living, and then the AVP staff, who is also, that's their full bread and butter.
Hey, Jake, this is Kevin. What happens to your contracts that you have? Do you have a kill clause that if the AVP no longer exists, your contract is null and void?
Yeah, great question. I'm in the middle of it. You know, I need to talk to my agent, Ryan Morgan, and work that out. Because there's stuff in the contract. It has a lot to do with how those sponsors are going to react to it. You know, whether they choose to fight it or not. And I haven't gotten word either way, so I don't know the answer to that right now. But it's not fun to deal with.
You're listening to Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to professional beach volleyball player Jake Gibb. He's joining us here on the program. And Jake, you just mentioned your agent, Ryan Morgan. This is a gentleman who represents several of the top names in the sport, including yourself, and was extremely vocal in the fall and early spring in an argument with USA Volleyball about player support and the condition of the AVP. And where does Ryan Morgan fit into this whole equation of the collapse of the AVP and the continuation of beach volleyball in the United States?
Well, you know, there's some confusion about Ryan Morgan. He's very vocal, but in behalf of his players. And he always has what the interests of his players at hand. And some people have been kind of befuddled about why he's so interested. He's so interested because he understands the importance of the Olympics and the importance of the U.S. Tour. And so the reason that's so important to him is to drive sponsorship for his players, and that's where he makes his income, you know, and he makes a very, very comfortable living off of that. So that's where his interest comes in. And some people were thinking that he wanted to drive, you know, he had some other interests. He doesn't. So yeah, that's, you know, it's pretty simple.
Well, it's interesting to me that you say the interest of his players, because that was one of the discussions that we had here on the show when everything was going down, is that Ryan was speaking for his players, but sort of positioned himself as representing all of beach volleyball. So I think that's how he ended up in that discussion.
Because most beach volleyball players are not represented. So most beach volleyball players turn to the person in the know, right? And that happened to me, Ryan Morgan. And he kind of got suckered. No, I don't know, suckered, but put into that spot where it wasn't necessarily where he wanted to be, but he's had to step in and be that guy in a lot of different situations. He did it big time in 2005 when there wasn't an FIVB contract that we could sign, and we couldn't even go over there and play. So he went over internationally and represented all the players, all the U.S. players, and got us a viable contract. And he put a ton of time into this, and he's not getting paid by any of the other players. He's just getting paid by those that he represents. So, yeah, he has stepped in and kind of almost been a player rep for us in many situations, but just out of, necessity.
Hey, Jake, are you planning on playing in the Manhattan Open, and have you heard some other, maybe events popping up, Cincinnati may happen?
Yeah. I'll tell you, I was just talking to Rosie. I don't know. That's
are you defending your title?
I want to. I still want to. But I just heard that it was going to be put old rules, big court, old school scoring. And I'm one of the guys that I'm like, hey, I want to play this sport. I play this sport because I love it. And so I was fully planning on playing Manhattan Beach Open. I wanted to defend my title. I don't care if there's no prize money. I love the sport. I love playing, and it's what I want to do. And then I heard about the big court, and the only reason I wouldn't play is I think it confuses people. I think if you play big court, which is a great game, would have helped. I would have embraced it. But you start doing that at a Manhattan Open, and I go down to the beach now, and everybody's playing small court. They've embraced it, and you go with it. Whether it's right or wrong, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that's where we are in the sport. You take it back to big court, and there's confusion. All the people coming and watching are like, oh, is that what we go back and do? And it just creates a confusion that has taken, 10 years to get over. And, you know, I don't necessarily want to embrace that or endorse that. So now I'm in a kind of a weird spot where maybe I won't play if that's the case.
Jake, you and your partner Sean Rosenthal, are you able to pick up more FIVB events for the remainder of this season to try and earn some more income and continue playing?
No, we didn't in time. We're scheduled to play or we're on the entrance for Holland, but we're still planning on playing that. Let's just put it that way. We're still scheduled to play that, but that's the only one we can play, and that's the final event of the season.
Jake, we appreciate you spending the time here. I'll get you out of here on this. What other options are there besides the FIVB? Are there other country tours or regional tours or events that you could go to as a volleyball player and reasonably expect to take home the title, make some money, and perhaps continue to play?
Yeah, great question. I guess that's what everyone looks into, right? You look into whether you go play this little, Cartier's tour or other small tours or you know, there's a tour in New Zealand that they've asked us to come play, which I might go play. But that all that kind of stuff is just for fun. I mean, it's just to kind of play beach volleyball, and none of it is viable as far as, what my sponsors want to see me doing and what interests me. So, yeah, I may go play a few of these small little tours, but actually not Cartier's tour. I'm not interested in that. But, yeah, I may go play in New Zealand for maybe a month or two, but just because I have some friends over there and it'd be fun. But it's a world tour for me. It's FIVB.
One last thing then. What about Cartier's tour does not interest you? The Corona Wide Open Tour is his tour. What doesn't interest you about participating in those events?
It's the same thing. It's the big court, old school. I think it's much for the same reason. I think it creates confusion. If I'm going to play World Tour, which I am going to, I just don't see the reason of switching back and forth and still fighting the fight that's not. If I felt like, hey, this was a strong way to go, and if we go big court, we can all, play big court for the rest of our lives, and it's going to be the future. And I just don't think that's the way it's going. And the way it is, and I think it's a fight that's not worth fighting, and so I'm not going to support it.
Well, Jake Gibb, thanks very much for spending the time to talk to us here on the Net Live. We wish you the best of luck as things go forward.
Yeah.
Here, keep up on how you do.
I appreciate it, guys. Keep up
the
good work.
Thanks, Jake.
Okay.
Thanks, Jake.
All right, Jake Gibb, professional beach volleyball player. Now you can't say AVP professional volleyball player.
And you can hear the sadness in his voice. And
absolutely, and
that's how a lot of people feel. I think about like Jeremy Roche, who I stand next to, for 7 years in a row, or guys like Dave Taylor on the guy's been with me 13 years. He's just he's a guy that works so behind the scenes, and Dave Culpepper, these guys run the crew. They've been crew members for like literally 13, 14 years. That's what they do, is set up the tournaments and carry the boxes and pack the ice.
This is 6 months, 7 months of work for them.
Oh yeah. So, it's a big deal. And, Kevin, you and I kind of looked at each other when I had mentioned about playing overseas, and you had said the indoor players do it. And I know they do, but for beach volleyball, it's not really the culture. You don't get paid like you do. Some of those guys indoors overseas make a lot of money, and it's their livelihood, and they go over there. But the
right.
FIVB, for, we're not used to that. We're used to you know, playing domestically and only three or four teams going, that's all that's going to be able to go. You can't have 30 American teams go FIVB.
True. It's all about perspective, though, because players now are making all this money indoors, and that's what people are hearing about. 10 years ago, people didn't make anything like that. You can just chop a zero right off of there for those players. And it's all about perspective. For years, people said, what if we had a tour here a professional league indoors here in the United States when I was a player? And I said, yeah, it'd be great for the first few years because guys would take less money to play here. But then I guarantee after 5 years, you would have people saying, I want to go play in Buffalo. Like, it's all about perspective. As soon as you lose that perspective, then you're in trouble. So I think if people have to play FIVB, what's going to happen is it's just going to decrease the amount of players who are interested, who are being a part of the sport, because they're, like you said, there are so few slots. Indoor has the advantage of all these leagues and all these opportunities, but there are so few slots that can really support you as a professional player. And the FIVB, you have to do well with all the travel and the expenses, and you have to really do well to support yourself on that.
I feel like we could have a five-hour show today. I just had a text message from Chris Brown from the CBVA, and he said he might call in after Jim McLaughlin to kind of explain the Manhattan Open thing and where the push is coming for the old court. It more awesome. Comes from the Sakely family and the city of Manhattan Beach, not
right
the CBVA.
On.
So I think they're going to lose some players because of that.
Oh, you kidding me? Yeah. I mean, Billy and Mayer and Brady are all and Baxter yesterday are all like, hey, do we play this thing? Like, I haven't played big court in like a decade.
Because I think it's a great story if the city and the CBVA run the Manhattan Open and our players rally around it with not that much money involved, rally around it and play. Kerry Walsh, Sean Scott, Jake Gibb, guys come and play. I think that's a cool story. I think it's newsworthy.
I would beg for it.
And I think it's awesome that, hey, look at this volleyball community. They're going to rally around it.
Are players really not going to play because the court's a little different size and there's no antennas? Are you really not going to play?
Maybe.
As a as a protest to that, the world is collapsing around you
protest.
And you're going to protest
that
the rules are different.
Like, so all of a sudden we're going to go play hoops on an 8-foot basket, play dunk ball instead of regular basketball?
Well, I'm not saying
let's play high-pitched fastball instead of baseball. I mean, high-pitched softball. I mean, I'm just saying, like...
Is it that drastic?
I don't think it's that drastic. I don't think it's that drastic. But if you're a player who's been playing this for 10 years, why are we going to do the Manhattan Open different in a matter of 3 days?
Because the AVP's collapse doesn't exist. I mean, that's the only reason I can think of. And I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying. I'm sort of playing devil's advocate on this. But if the city makes this decision to hold this event, which has been traditionally an event of the city, right? It's 50 years. That predates the AVP by a ton. So this has existed for a long, long time, was the premier event, the Wimbledon, right? So you're playing it different. Wimbledon is something. It always gets referred to as the Wimbledon of beach volleyball, right? Wimbledon, they play on grass, all right? That's totally different than playing
French,
on clay
play on clay.
Or playing on – yeah, it's totally wacky. So if you're playing with a little bit bigger court, a little different court, they do that in baseball, all the fields are different sizes. I don't see the big deal when it's still pass, set, hit. If it's still that – it's the same sport, and whether it's big court, small court, if you're the best player, come out and play. Come out and play. I don't see how that is that drastic a problem.
You will lose some players.
Go play.
That may be true.
Whether you're right or wrong, you're still going to lose some players. I happen to love the old game, but I've adjusted to the new game, and that's where the world plays it. So
sure,
I'm a fan of it.
Okay,
we do have a special
guest here.
Long
term, fine. We do.
We absolutely do. He is. We're going to switch gears. Get off the beach for
a couple of minutes.
For a few moments.
We'll be back. Those on the chat board who are really into it, we'll
panic.
Be back. We want to make sure that everyone out there knows we have coming up here with a partnership with the American Volleyball Coaches Association, the AVCA. We're doing the College Volleyball Weekly here on the Net Live throughout the women's college season. So we want to make sure we pay homage to what's going on with women's college volleyball, what's coming up, starts in about 2 weeks. We're really going to kick it off next week. We want to give you a little primer here.
One of the great coaches in our country, coached at USC, won a national championship in 1990 with Ivy and Greenbaum and those guys, then went over to the women's game, went to Kansas State, resurrected the Washington program from the depths of the bottom of the Pac-10 and won a national championship in 2005. He's been recognized as the National Coach of the Year. He's won Pac-10 Coach of the Year three times. And a guy I call a good friend, that's Jim McLaughlin. Jimmy Mack joining us, the head coach of University of Washington. Jimmy Mack, how are you?
Chris, I'm doing good. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, we love having you, Coach. And thanks for joining the Net Live. You got Kevin Barnett here and Dan Madden-Reed, obviously, at USA practice, so he's not with us. Coach, you're just getting underway. Tell us how the first week has gone of double days and how the girls are looking.
Well, Chris, we're on day 7, and day 1 was medium, as you know most day 1s are. But then we've made some progress, so it's been I don't know, a kind of a progressive thing, and the kids are getting better. And I think the best thing about it is they're just understanding the emphasis we want to really, you know, spend our time on, and we're making even more progress now. So it's good. Week one's good.
Hey, Jimmy Mack, last year, a disappointing finish. You guys lost to Colorado State in round two. You have three All-American returning. What is your expectation this year? You guys were picked to finish, I think, third in the Pac-10, but the Pac-10's, of course, you know, the premier conference in volleyball.
Well, you know, the standard's awful high, and it will be every year. And, you know, the first and most important thing is see how good we can become. And if we can become great and meet some great standards with great regularity, then we have a chance to be in the hunt and win the thing at the end. But, you know, they're learning how to stay in the present tense. They're really focused on today. But we have a chance. Just based on some of the things I've seen thus far, we have a chance if we keep progressing.
Coach Kevin Barnett here. I wanted to ask you, who are the best teams out there in the NCAA that you see? Who's your major competition this season?
Kevin, there is lots of good teams, you know, and the margin is smaller than most people would think. But, you know, just traditionally, you know, I think SC is going to be good, Stanford's good, and, you know, Nebraska's good. I know Russ will have a good team. And, you know, it just Illinois, you know, I've heard they're good, and, you know, Minnesota. So I think it's just, you know, there's some tradition and there's some of the same teams. But then somebody's going to pop up. Somebody else will be good. So we just got to take care of ourselves, not look sideways, and just become a great team.
Now, Coach, Kevin and I have mentioned this a lot of times on this show. Last year's Final Four and the year before as well, we looked at it as the highest level of women's volleyball that we have ever seen. Do you agree with that? And where is the game going right now, the indoor game?
For sure. You know, the women are playing faster in our country. They're more aggressive in their defensive package. And, you know, so, you know, and the kids are getting bigger, stronger, faster. It's amazing to me every year. It just seems like they're growing. But I like the way we're just setting the ball faster and the way we're playing defense. But it's a lot more like the men's game for sure.
Well, we've talked a lot about the coaching of men and the coaching of women. Of course, Hugh McCutcheon on the national team now having switched over, and you have switched over and had success with both. What are some of the differences or some of the similarities you see in coaching men and women?
Well, Kevin, the game is the game. You know, if you're going to teach somebody to pass at the highest level, you know, you're not teaching it differently to women. And, you know, you're going to teach the right mechanics. And that's the limiting factor, our flaws in your mechanics, both on the men's side and the women's side. But women can be powerful. They can play fast. And then I think the thing that separates teams are their eye work and how they see things, and they stay focused on the things that tell you what to do. And I think those things are the same. So, you know, maybe the difference is in talking to them. You know, if you talk to a group of men in between game two and three and tell them, hey, we need to upgrade our defense to offense trans, sometimes they're going, hey, Jim, it's not me, it's this guy over here. Where women are going, oh, my goodness, he's talking to me. And they take it more personal. But the other thing is women like it if it's totally objective. And so we keep some numbers and we go off these numbers and they get into the feeling thing and all that. And so if it's objective, women just appreciate that at a much higher level.
The women's game, you said, is starting to change over to a power game and more follow the men's. And I've talked to head coach Hugh McCutcheon at the national level, and he talked about getting rid of the slide in favor of coming out of the back row. Are you seeing athletes that can reasonably do that consistently out of the D, out of the pipe?
For sure. You know, I think, you know, in a perfect world, you can run maybe a third step pipe, but you don't need to do that in the women's game. Second step is plenty fast enough. But in 2004, Kevin, we were running it, and people said, hey, women can't run out of the back row. And we ran it just to keep teams in a little bit more of a bunch read and put some pressure on them on the pins. And that pipe really did it for us. And now, you know, Hugh had called me and said, hey, I like the way Kinder's hitting the D on a second step. So women can do it. And the timing is a function of the eye work. You know, the approach is the approach. It's just where are you in your approach relative to when the setter has the ball. So, you know, women can pay attention to that stuff just as men do. But I think you have to have that presence in the middle of the court for sure just to put more pressure on the defense.
You know, Jim, when I was doing your games back in 2005, is the year you guys won the national championship, actually. You had Courtney Thompson, who was probably one of the best college setters that I ever seen. You had Crystal Morrison, and you had Tomasevic. And the reason why I thought you guys were so good is because you could run Morrison, that pipe in transition, and then you also hit behind with Tomasevic so well. And at that point, you know, women's teams weren't doing that as much. And I think that's why that team will go down as one of the great teams, and it kind of changed the game.
Yeah, more and more teams are doing it. I remember when Ron Larson called me and said, hey, can I get your numbers, just to look at the numbers? And, you know, the interesting thing is that pipe set or the big set is still about 10 to 11 to 12% lower than the set at the antennas, but it's the cumulative effect of the whole thing that puts pressure on the defense. So I think one of the best swings in the game for men and women is a combo in the middle, and the pipe serves that purpose, you know, somewhat.
Tell us about the strengths and weaknesses of your team as you have gone through a few practices and looking forward to the season.
Well, I think we're physical, Kevin, and we can get on the ball, and we're learning our timing, and we're learning just how to do our job and how the hitter needs to be in the right place, and the setter's got to let the hitter do the work. But we're starting to make better choices based on the situations, and we're just going to get better and better at that as we go. But right now we're making sure our movements are in place and that there are no flaws in our mechanics. And if we can do that with our serve-receive, then I think we can be a big-time team. But, you know, we have to improve in some areas. And it's not magic, as you know. You know, I remember how hard you worked. You got to work hard emotionally, mentally, physically, every play, every day. And our girls are starting to learn that.
You're listening to Net Live. We're here. We're talking to head coach at the University of Washington, Jim McLaughlin. And, Coach, you mentioned my work ethic, and we left one thing
I didn't know
off.
About that, Coach.
We left one thing off of your resume, and that was you cut me in 1995 from the USA B team.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm still upset about that.
Jimmy Magnus.
I remember that. But, I remember, you know what? The way Kevin Barnett handled that was awesome, and I remember you coming back even stronger. But I still remember you starting to pass the ball at a high level, and I thought, okay, he's going to be big time, and you were. And just that ability to pass was huge for you.
I was terrible in that camp. Let's just get that out there.
Hey, Jim, we've talked a lot about beach volleyball. One of your former stars, Crystal Morrison, plays on the tour. You were born and raised in Santa Monica, California. When you heard the news of the AVP canceling the rest of their season, how did it affect you?
I was sad. You know, I grew up right there going every day, and it was part of our life. And I think down deep, you know, you don't live a real volleyball life unless you've played both indoor and outdoor. I mean, that's just my own personal thing. But somehow this country is going to rally around it, and we're going to get it back. And I'm just praying every night that we get the Manhattan back, you know. But, yeah, it's a major disappointment.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us here. We wish you the best of luck this season.
And he just killed it, too.
Yeah. Great stuff. Great technical stuff. And we appreciate it. And we hope that you become a listener to our show if you weren't already.
I'm listening, Kevin. And thank you, Chris, for having me.
Yeah. Oh, Coach, we love it. We're gonna have you on, too, around midseason. And make sure you work Keno a little harder over there. Jose Gandara, your assistant.
He's awesome. Both Tui and Keno are big time.
Tui. Well, Tui's way better than him, but that's fine.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Excellent. All right, head coach Jim McLaughlin of the University of Washington Huskies joining us here on the Net Live. Great stuff. Hey, we're going to take a little bit of a break, guys. When we come back, we are going to talk AVP. I know we have somebody else in the queue. We're going to talk more AVP here in just a moment. We need to take a breather, and Dan needs to wipe the sweat off his shiny dome.
Hey.
All right, we'll be right back momentarily here on the Net Live.
Dan?
Hey, if I wanted to call in and talk to you guys, what would I have to do?
Well, first you'd have to have something meaningful to say.
I can do that.
And then you want to probably scale that down to about 20 seconds.
Done.
And then you want to pick up the phone and dial 347-677-1525.
So I can call 347-677-1525 and say, "Reed Pretty, you're my favorite volleyball player ever."
Now, Dan, when you say that, are you making fun of me? Or, is the joke on me? I don't get it.
Get off the bench, sub yourself in, pick up the phone and call.
The Net Live will not be held responsible for opinions and ideas expressed by others.
Missed the latest episode of The Net Live? Download it now by clicking on the iTunes logo on thevolleyballnetwork.com. It's free.
All right, welcome back in. The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. It's been an interesting show thus far. We talked to Jake Gibb, beach volleyball player. Talked to head coach Jim McLaughlin from the University of Washington about the great stuff that's going on up there. And I want to remind you again that we have the College Volleyball Weekly coming up in partnership with the American Volleyball Coaches Association. Big kickoff coming next week. We still have lots of business here to do with the AVP.
Good friend of mine coming on the show, plays for 12th Street. They took second at the Manhattan Six-Man. He runs the CBVA. He's the president. He also runs surf camps in the South Bay. His name is Chris Brown. He can absolutely snap it backside, too. He's a great surfer. CB, you on with us here, bud?
I am. How you doing, Geeter?
I'm great, man. You're here with Danny Madden and Kevin Barnett and myself. And, you know,
hey, Danny.
What up, CB?
Obviously, CB.
Oh, hey, Chris.
Hey, Kevin.
Say hi to Barnett.
Not sure if we've met before, but nice to meet you.
That's okay.
CB, obviously, you've been a fan of this sport. Your friends have played this sport. You play this sport. The heavy news that came down on Friday, before we get into the Manhattan Open, when it really went down, give us your thoughts.
Well, just a complete bummer, basically, and a little bit of deja vu. It just feels like we've been here before, and I think it's a big loss for the entire beach volleyball community and, you know, most of us who've grown up in Southern California and care about the sport, love the AVP, and a lot of our friends play on the tour and, you know, some other people announce and make livings doing other things, and just a bummer that, you know, I just really thought that they would at least be able to finish off the season. And I think that's what most of us were hoping for and thought that's what would happen. And unfortunately, it didn't. So now we are where we are.
CB, we've gotten a lot of emails, a lot of Facebook posts and Twitter in our chat room about the Manhattan Open. Well, before we dissect it, tell us what you've learned after meeting with the city and what's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's basically why I wanted to call in. I'm sure your phone's been blowing up as well. My phone's been blowing up all weekend, and unfortunately I haven't had many answers. I just came from a city meeting at Manhattan Beach, and basically how it's going to boil down is it is going to go on. Qualifier on Friday, double elimination tournament on Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be the top 46 AVP teams will be seeded directly into the main draw. There are two teams that are getting into the main draw through qualifying tournaments, which have already happened, and then 16 teams will get in through the Friday qualifier, both men's and women's. The format of the tournament is going to be long court, old school, side out scoring. And before anybody starts yelling at me, I was not a party to that decision, although I personally prefer that style of volleyball. I don't think it makes a lot of sense to do that in what boils down to the middle of a season when everybody's been playing short court. So,
Chris, where is the kicker for that coming from? That's what I was
going to get to next. A lot of people might not understand that the Manhattan Beach Open is actually owned by the city of Manhattan Beach, and that is why for years, the AVP has had trouble in their dealings with the city of Manhattan running the tournament. And it's been tough for them because, obviously, it's the crown jewel of the season. It's the biggest tournament. It's known as the Wimbledon of beach volleyball. But there have been a couple instances before where the AVP has just flat out walked away and not even held it. Most recently, I believe, it was in 98. And it's because they couldn't come to an agreement with city over the date of the tournament, the format of the tournament, different things that have come up over the years. So this time, right now, it's basically a decision that was made by the people that head the Parks and Rec Department at Manhattan Beach, and also the Sakely family, who's basically known, you know, as the first family of beach volleyball. And I think I will, once we get off the phone, I will try to contact them and have them get in touch with you. I think I went down there today. I advocated for short court. They listened. I think they understand, and they understand, you know, what a lot of the response is going to be from the player, but they, from the players, but they also have a pretty convincing argument. I walked out of there thinking, you know what, this tournament's actually going to be really cool. So that's, I mean, that's the next point that I would just want to get to. I didn't hear the part where Jake, I guess, said that he wouldn't play if it was big court, but that just would really sadden me. And to be honest, I think he would just be making a big mistake. For Jake to not play, I'm sure Sean's going to play, and it would really suck if Sean ended up getting his name on the pier, you know, with somebody else other than Jake, just because Jake didn't feel like playing.
Oh, Chris,
the court.
You mentioned getting your name on the pier, and that used to be the only prize for this tournament, was getting your name on the pier, but now prize money has become such a big part of the sport. Is this tournament going to have prize money?
Yeah, that's another thing I was getting to. Unfortunately, I can't answer it for you yet, but what I can tell you is that the city is negotiating with sponsors. They've already had one, what I would characterize as a considerable offer, and that company wants naming rights. And for whatever reason, the city is battling them on that right now. So I think my hunch is that there will be some sort of prize money. As of now, there's nothing set in stone on that.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Geeter here. You know, just to clarify, you know, Jake and I think some of the players were, in their thought process, they didn't say they weren't going to play, but they were now considering not playing because I think their thought is, why now? And I think a little pride is involved in that. And I think everyone just kind of has to maybe meet and get on the same page with that, you know, because I think obviously, as you said, if you talk to the city and you talk to the Sakely family, you know, maybe they have an argument where they can sway these
right.
guys.
Right, and I agree. I completely agree with you. As I said, you know, I had the same thought going into it. Why switch formats here on the guys? You know, middle of the season, biggest tournament of the year. But they definitely do make a compelling argument. It's the 50th anniversary of the tournament. That's definitely playing into their decision, and the fact that they believe that. That type, the long court, whatever you want to call it, old school format, favors a more dynamic, athletic type of player. And they say that the reason that the tournament gained its status as the greatest tournament in the world was because it was always the most grueling, the toughest tournament there was on the schedule. It didn't just, you know, it wasn't just out of thin air. It was because it was always a very, very big draw and the toughest teams. And, they're, you know, in their mind, that's why they're doing this. And it's a little bit of nostalgia. It's a little bit of honoring the past. And it's a little bit of showcasing a format of volleyball that they deem to be superior.
So, CB, we can spread the word. There will be a Manhattan Open this weekend, south side of the pier. And for all those players, I talked to Sean Scott last night, and he was saying he was going to call Johnny Hyden. They thought they were going to play, but they didn't really know any particulars, or is there any information that we can spread to the players?
Yeah, and that's the most important thing. I'm not sure if it's enabled yet, but by the end of the business day today, you should be able to go to cbva.com and register online. I can even say that the qualifier will be $75, which is going to be run on Friday. It's going to be single limb, just similar to the style that the AVP was running. And then the main event will be Saturday and Sunday, double limb. Main event, if you're already in, that's $100. I mean, is there anything else? I know we're covering a lot of information really quick.
Well, if Barnett and those guys want to learn how to surf, how do they do that? Chris.
Well, you go to campsurf.com. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
After coming from somewhere else and you're just going to spend a couple weeks in South Bay, you better learn how to surf with Chris Brown.
bottom line. I mean, that's an absolute no-brainer there. But I just want to let everybody know who's listening that all of us who are going to be involved running this tournament have the utmost respect for the tradition of this tournament. And while it was unfortunate that, you know, this all came down so last minute, and obviously that's led to this mad scramble, I'm very confident that at the end of the day we're going to have a great tournament this weekend, and it's going to be different, but I think it's going to be, I think at the end of the day it'll end up being really cool, and everybody will walk away saying that it was, you know, we salvaged a great weekend.
Chris Brown is the president of the California Beach Volleyball Association and now responsible for the running of the Manhattan Beach Open this coming weekend. Chris, thank you for joining us here on the Net Live.
Thanks, guys.
All right, good luck.
Hey, how about when CB was here and you got 109 users on our chat
That's
board.
Pretty nice. That's pretty nice. They were all getting on Camp Surf. They wanted to learn how to surf.
Do we have a record of what's the most?
That's it, right there.
Chat
That's
room
the
right
record.
Here?
That's the record. Hey, you know, I had a couple of thoughts during that. When we're talking about the players playing and the old court, wide court, antennas, no antennas, old school. I mean, this is going to be an old school event. There will be no bleachers. People are going to have to pile on the pier. They're going to have to come down and be 15 deep the way we've talked about the old pictures are, and really could have a great nostalgic feel to it. I'd like to see people wear the short shorts, elephant trunks. Any type of small things I dig. You know, let's see a lot of leg on those guys. But I thought it can be approached two ways by the players. One, it can be frustration that the rules are different and that things are going to be different than they've been for the last 10 years. Or it can be fun and say, this is a challenge. I want to take it on. I want to be a part of it. It's going to be a great event.
I hope they choose the latter. And, you know, I think you made a great point before CB came on saying, hey, it is volleyball. No antennas, you know, it still is the sport that we grew up and we love. But I, you know, the flip side of that is I understand what Jay Gibbs saying. I understand what Kerry Walsh is saying, like, God, does it have to go back to the old court and the old rules? We don't play that way anymore. I see both sides of it. I hope at the end of the day, the volleyball community and the volleyball players rally around what we're going through and we have a Manhattan Open, and I hope it's as good as we think it can be.
The Manhattan Open is going to be awesome. And anyone who's thinking, I'm having trouble thinking of the right words to say about people who are considering or who aren't going to play, but I don't like them because volleyball right now needs everyone to play, needs the unity of the Manhattan Open, and it's going to be amazing. Chris Brown, Jay Sakely, those guys know how to run a volleyball tournament, and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be old school, which is what I've wanted for, you know, 10 years or whatever, and I'm pumped to see it.
You know, it'll be really
old school. I want to see everyone play.
You know, it'll be really old school.
What?
As if a team got put together and came out and didn't block. All they did was dig. Was it Ron Von Hagen?
Dane Selznick's coming back.
Who could do that? Who are the two players who could do that? Ty Trambley?
Ty Trambley and Billy Allen, because they've played old school no block before.
Yeah, but Billy Allen can block. Come on, we need two tiny guys.
Trambley
Chris Walmer. Bring Chris Walmer back out of retirement.
Tim Walmer,
sorry.
Chris Walmer does play, and he's tall. He's a blocker.
Okay. Tim Walmer, little guy. Little guy.
Lindsey Breeden, my boss, is on the chat board.
Wondering why you're not at work?
And also going on in the chat board is Billy Allen and Paul Baxter forming a
partnership.
Partnership for
that.
Manhattan. Brady's not going to play. His back's all jacked up still. We played four-man all day yesterday, and he didn't even play. Actually, yeah, he did a little bit.
We have a caller in the queue?
We do.
I'm getting that text.
We do. We are pleased to be joined by AVP CEO, and we understand also AVP Commissioner Mike Dodd, direct from the offices. Jason and Mike, are you there?
Hello.
Hello.
That's Eric Sullivan.
That's Eric Sullivan. Wait a second.
Yes.
Wow, you just got a good introduction right there, my friend.
I did. I got that's unbelievable. That's a huge raise for me.
Yeah, I got to hang up.
I'm not kidding. Sorry, buddy.
Well, Hodel's not here. We can only identify people by their numbers, so we get sometimes French fries.
Again? Can we hang up?
Danny Mann wants to hang up on Eric Sullivan.
Wow,
that's
tragic.
Tough. Yeah, sorry, bud.
That's all right. You guys got to take a call.
You can pass very
Who's
well.
A better defensive player?
Eric Sullivan or who?
Dan Madden.
Oh,
come on.
Just a joke.
Come on.
Indoor or beach.
Esau, we had Jimmy Mack on. How's it going for you guys at Nebraska? Because we're talking a lot of AVP, obviously, but since you're here, we'll ask you that one question.
Yeah, you know, things are great. We're a week in as well, and the girls are working hard, and, you know, we've got a lot of good pieces in place, And like Jimmy Mack was saying, you know, we're going through the process of cleaning things up here and there and fine-tuning our offense, and, you know, things look good.
Well, how did word hit Nebraska, or did it even hit Nebraska? I know they like their beach volleyball, but...
Mostly in bars.
No, but they have a nice facility there, and they've done well at the Collegiate National kind of stuff. But was there any talk of the AVP folding up shop for the rest of the season?
Yeah, you know, for sure. That word is out there. We've got athletes in our gym that are very interested in, or were very interested in pursuing their post-college careers on the beach. And so, you know, I think like everywhere else, there's a lot of disappointment. And I think when, you know, there, as Kevin knows, there's very few opportunities to pursue a career in volleyball. And when one of them goes away, it's tragic. You know, it's not... It's a bummer. And so on the college side, you know, we're all kind of interested to see how that affects the NCAA side of sand volleyball. And, you know,
that's a good question. How do you think it does affect it?
You know, I think it's going to affect it somehow, some way. Nobody's really sure, but I do know that when it was proposed, there was, you know, it wasn't tied to the AVP, but there was definitely some correlation there of, hey, here's this professional product that is very popular and is on TV quite a bit, and why wouldn't we be doing this in college? And so now that that doesn't exist, I don't know if the sell to the administrations gets any easier. And, you know, it's still a year off, and so I think there's probably some process to go through to see how all of that comes through.
All right, well, Sully, we appreciate you calling in, but we are getting rid of you right now because we have the people we thought we were going to talk to, but we always love it when you call on the show.
Hey, I appreciate it. I'll give you guys a call next week.
Thanks, Sully. See ya.
Thanks.
All right. Eric Sullivan from Nebraska, once again checking in. He's like our Nebraska just consultant. We ask him all things about University of Nebraska and the whole state.
Can he get Tom Osborne next time?
Yeah. Seriously. Let's think
How about
really
Dan's reaction?
People.
That was fantastic. He was just like, dude,
trying
we can't talk indoor right now.
Oh, my eyes are rolling nonstop.
Dan's like, I came here for beach. We're not allowed to talk about anything else. All right. So now we do have in the queue the two gentlemen we were looking for before. We're pleased to be joined by CEO Jason Hodel and AVP Commissioner Mike Dodd. Gentlemen, are you there?
We're here.
We're here. Good morning.
Hey, thank you very much, both of you, for spending the time. We know this has been a very difficult process and not the most fun for both of you. We appreciate your willingness to come on the show and talk about it. First question, when did you guys really know that this tour was in danger of collapsing?
Well, I think the big moment for us was July 21st. Pretty sure that was the Monday right after Hermosa Beach, and we had a board meeting, and as part of that board meeting we talked about funding, and it was the first time that Mike and I heard that the ownership group could not fund the losses of the tour for the rest of the season. And so for Mike and I, we instantly kind of went into crisis mode, and that was the same week we had to call the players, and everything from there has been pretty well chronicled.
Jason, at what point did you guys realize this is just isn't enough time to make?
Are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, you just broke up for a second.
Okay, the question was, when did you realize that this wasn't enough time to make up the money? We've heard 24 days, $4 million.
Right. That's roughly correct. I mean, there were different flavors of that. We were trying to raised $2 million to be a short-term bridge to get through the next couple tournaments and pay TV. And there were larger deals out there that were the larger numbers, like, you know, 4 and 6. When do you know it's not enough time? Well, Mike and I were kicking, scratching, and fighting up until Friday afternoon. And in retrospect, all of us can look back and say there wasn't enough time. I think in the last week was whenever you really had to step back and say, well, if we had a longer shot clock, we probably could have run a winning play.
You say that we know it was 24 days. You say you went into crisis mode. From that moment, what was your immediate actions? Who were you targeting? Where were the opportunities that you really thought you could get that $2 million or that $4 million?
Well, to RJSM's credit, they were trying to raise funds from additional investors from the outset of the season to join the team, essentially, and provide us more resources, and a lot of them have relationships. So that had been ongoing. What wasn't clear to me and to Mike was that it was a little bit of an all or nothing. You know, it had to, the money had to be raised, or else there wasn't going to be liquidity for the sport and for the tour. And I mean, Mike and I, it was more my mission, but we reached out to as many people as we could. I'd say the total population of investors and groups we reached out to, probably well over 30. And we targeted the folks that invest in sports predominantly, first and foremost.
Hey guys, at the end of the day, whether it was a numbers guy or whether it was someone that was passionate about our sport, what were some of the hurdles that they just couldn't get over and ultimately not fund the sport?
Well, number one, the way the AVP is structured right now, with the kind of contracts that we have with our sponsors, we're built on that classic AVP event that we all know, which is a very high cost structure. And in its new birth, the AVP, I'm very hopeful and I'm optimistic. It's going to come back in some form or fashion. It's too great a sport not to. But when it does, the fundamental business model itself is going to have to be reworked. The assets that were delivered to sponsors by contract, you know, whether they be media assets or the setup itself, it was a very high cost production. And in a market like we have right now, where sponsors are willing to pay a certain amount for certain assets, and we all know the kind of environment we have, it just becomes really tough to break even, as you guys know. You want to add to that?
Mike Dodd, you've been around for a long time. You and I have actually worked together for 13 years, but you were a part of the glory days. You've seen its ups and downs. A lot has been talked about in this last week about the model and does it work and what do we need to change. And I know you guys were really, really working on slashing things and making it the right model. What is going to work for us, Mike? Or what are your thoughts on things that can work for us?
You know, I think that you know, the model that worked the best in the earlier days was certainly a model that, first of all, the players were owners of the tour, and I think that has to be an element in the future, that there has to be some type of collective ownership between the players and the tour. I think there needs to be a more ownership all the way around. I think, you know, when it really worked, NBC was more of a partner and was more helpful and involved and created opportunities with the NFL properties and other things. And you know, in the earlier days, Miller Lite was definitely more of a owner and proprietor and took, you know, an active involvement in the tour beyond just a strict, you know, sponsorship type of arrangement. And so, you know, there's a lot of really interesting and dynamic individuals and groups that were out there down to the wire that were very interested in the AVP. But to be honest with you, they were more interested in a new AVP, you know, or a new entity or something that kind of left behind a lot of the, you know, the debt and the different challenging aspects that this business had as it is or as it was. You know, it was funny. On Friday, I was just kind of took the long way home and drove around PV and thought a lot about it. And it really, you know, so many people were calling me and saying, oh, it's a sad day and this and that, and I agreed to a certain extent, but there was a part of me that had a lot of optimism too, because, like I said, there's a lot, and especially, you know, when we were very upfront with the players and told them where we stood after, you know, we found out what was going on as far as the funding from our ownership group that wasn't going to be there, then it came out in the paper, and then, you know, exponentially, people started calling in interested groups. You know, obviously there were the groups that were kind of the bottom feeders that wanted to really kind of take advantage of a wounded prey out there in the water. But there were a lot of really high quality, very, very successful people that had a passion for volleyball. So, you know, I think about those groups and those people, and I think about you know, a different model, definitely, you know, maybe a little bit going back more toward the old school where it was less of a stadium effect and more of a wide open effect where there was always such intense interaction between the fans and the players and the sponsors. And I know that we were heading in that direction. Hermosa was insane where we had all the sponsor booths around the side courts 1 and 2. And I envision a tour where the stadium court or the main court and the feature side courts are all kind of blended into one big area surrounded by sponsors, and it becomes more of the festival. And I think that model and that direction, and maybe us taking a little bit of wind out of our egos and saying, okay, we're beach volleyball and we are a lifestyle and a great sport and we can be both and we should market ourselves as both and create opportunities in that way like it was at the beginning. At the beginning, we didn't have any lofty ideas that, oh, we're just the best volleyball players in the world. We knew we were a young adult promotion. We knew that, you know, the Cuervos and the beer companies and the people loved us because we appealed to a young adult market. And so why try to be something that you're not? I think in a way, there was a fundamental part of the kind of the modern era of AVP that thought, well, we need to be big time. Everybody kept talking NBA and this and that. And at a certain point, you need to just embrace what you are and then let the opportunities develop from that instead of trying to be something you're not.
You're listening to Net Live here on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. We're talking to AVP CEO Jason Hodel and Commissioner Mike Dodd. Mike and Jason, I know you guys fought to the very end. You went down swinging, and you mentioned the debt. Mike talked a little bit about the debt. What were some of the other sticking points as you tried to get that investment capital, and does the AVP name really have value that exceeds its debt, or is it better to start over with some sort of new name?
I think as far as the challenges goes, Kevin, there clearly were a lot of liabilities that AVP Incorporated had. However, the brand and the intangible value, everybody recognizes that, and the rich history of the sport. And so there is value there. And just to be clear, so Mike and I were let go with all the staff on Friday. And so we're not really talking to you now as the CEO and the commissioner of the AVP. Right now we're talking to you as Mike and Jason. And so this is not some official statement, but the ownership of the tour, RJSM, they need to figure out how to take that intangible asset that we all know and love and try to give it a rebirth and deal with the liabilities. And that's really what business reorganizations are all about. And Mike and I are going to try to help in any way we can, you know, as it goes forward.
You mentioned RJSM and managing partner Nick Lewin. How much was he involved with the construction of the tour, the business day-to-day operations of the tour, since he took over last April? April.
Well, so the key is RJSM put a lot of money into the tour in September of 2008. Regards to them for stepping in whenever the tour needed funding back then, you know, almost exactly 2 years ago. And then last year, whenever in 2009, and he became a little bit more active, of course, but he has been trying to raise money and bring in additional investors and working really hard, really for the past 9 months or so. And so that's been his primary focus. When it comes to the day-to-day operations and running the events, that was up to myself and Mike and the rest of the staff here to produce great events. Now, you've had him on the show before, and he's a real creative thinker, and he has lots of ideas. And so he was never short of ideas for us to try, right? But, no, when it comes to the day-to-day operations, that was on Mike and I.
Jason, are you or Mike going to be involved in the Manhattan Open? We had Chris Brown on just before you guys in the CBVA in the city. They're going to put it on, and they're going to do the old court and the old rules, side-out scoring. I want to know what your guys' thoughts are on that.
Chris, I'm I'd heard that, and I certainly in some respects understand why it just might be a cleaner, easier way to just go completely away from a group like the AVP that obviously had let the city down and whatnot. But I'm a little disappointed, to be quite frank with you, about the old school and the larger court. I thought that they were going to run a Manhattan Open kind of, obviously by the CBVA and by the city, but more still geared as, one of the top professional beach volleyball events in the world. And right or wrong, everybody has their opinion, but the very best players in the world are playing with the smaller court and with the antennas and with the rules that are set in place by the FIVB and certainly carried forward by USA Volleyball and was, always part of the AVP model, where the rules that guys needed to play with and compete with to be able to go and succeed and succeed quite well at the Olympics. So I'm a little disappointed in that. I see it. I can get it, but still I'm disappointed.
Jason, obviously you're walking around with a heavy heart, as am I and all the staff, and people just kind of now go their own way. I mean, some people are kind of waiting to see what happens with volleyball. I'm trying to see what new fish I can fry, but what are you going to do? Are you going to stay here? Are you looking to get back in volleyball, or have you thought about, what you're going to do with your family?
Well, Dieter, I up until Friday afternoon, I was just clawing and scratching for the AVP, and then the changes were made, and the weekend I was kind of off the grid with the family, and I have to regroup. You all know that I came from an investment background, so I'm looking around and talking a lot to folks about maybe getting back into that world. But like I said a second ago, if it's not a job, I still want to be helpful and supportive of the folks around here. When I say around here, around the sport and around the AVP, even if it's little things like there's a lot of folks that stopped paying the AVP because we were in distress, and then therefore we haven't paid some of the people that did work for us. Well, I'm not being paid for it, but I want to help collect and then pay people that are owed money by the AVP. Little things like that can just help to make this a smoother process. But I don't know what's going to happen, Geeter.
We know that this just happened to you on Friday. You've had very little time to really process it and work through it. But do you at this point have any takeaways from your experience at the helm of this organization for you personally?
Quite a few. I mean, it's almost, we could talk about this for hours. I think one thing I want to make really clear to everybody that listens, Canyon came in as the CFO really just a few months ago, and his focus was cost cutting. And I'll just give you a quick data point there. The Hermosa Beach Open, which I think all of us on this call were there, it was a wonderful event, a great event. That event cost the AVP 31% less for operations costs than it did only a year ago, almost a couple $100,000 difference. Really hard effort by Canyon. I never would want people to get the impression that, the AVP ran into financial distress, that had anything to do with the CFO. It did not. Canyon did exactly what he was supposed to do, which was to help figure out how to skinny the cost structure while meeting sponsor obligations. And the second part of that sentence, the wall meeting sponsor obligations, that's the hard part. That's where you're really constrained on how much you can cut. For myself personally, it was I came to the AVP 2 years ago with the investment in September, really just trying to help out. And I've learned a ton and had to, learn it and fast forward. The big thing for me with Mike joining this year, just a few months ago, we became fast friends and partners in this whole thing. And really, this season and the challenges of it and the struggles of it, it would have been hard for me to imagine getting through it without Mike. And he's sitting here right next to me as a partner on Monday morning after this all blew up. And I think that's just a symbol of the partnership.
You know, I'm just going to say behind the scenes, I was privy to some of the stuff, and I know that, you know, Canyon and you and Mike and the powers that be, you know, Mike saved my job in New Orleans back in 1998, so I want to thank you for that. But you guys worked tirelessly and to the last minute. So I don't think you're getting much appreciation probably, because all we're doing is talking about the demise of it. But
right,
you know, I think there should be a lot of gratitude and thanks to you guys for going to bat and trying to save it. So as an employee, I just want you to know that it's appreciated.
Well, thank you. I will say this too about Mike and Canyon. The last few weeks, whenever we had to both prepare for the downside, but also while we're scrambling to try to save things, on the downside, you know, we really tried to do everything the right way in the last few weeks, paying all the players, paying all the refs, paying as many people around the tour and the family as possible, and being straight with people and very transparent. And really that's a real tribute to the character of the team, but especially Mike and Canyon.
Well, Jason and Mike, we really appreciate you spending the time here and your willingness to come on and talk about this so soon after it had happened. We wish you the best of luck in the future and hope that volleyball comes back after this tragic event.
It absolutely will. And this new business model that we're talking about, sometimes the old structural flaws of a business model, in a way, you almost have to restart it and reboot it from scratch. And so what Mike was talking about when he was driving around Palos Verdes there is a sense of the future and a sense for optimism once this thing gets restructured in a better way with the right business model. I believe that too.
Well, I hope that gets carried forward, and I hope someone new steps in and it really goes beyond where it has been in the past. So thank you both.
Amen. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Jason. You know, guys, one thing is that when you've traveled with the AVP or you've been a part of it, Danny, I know you've joined the last few years, you know, with your friends and stuff like that. It really does become a lot of a family. You know, the vendors, the referees are a big part of it. Everyone travels together, the staff. So I think, you know, as we carry on and move on, you can just hear the sadness in their voices and in mine the last few weeks. It's been really tough. You know, I worked Angels all weekend. It was so great to work because it would get your mind away from it when you were actually doing the job. And I know you know that, Kevin, when you're in it and you're on, you're thinking about that. But the minute there'd be dead time or I'd be sitting up in the press box and it's inning three or four,
right,
I'm looking at my phone and I'm getting the text messages and the emails, and it's hard to even write your best friends back. They're calling and leaving messages, and got so many tweets from people, just unbelievable support on Twitter, and just they said the nicest things. It's just so hard to get back to everybody, and you almost like it's hard to, because then you start thinking about the good times. And you know, I only lost it once. You know, I was pretty much holding it together. I had a million stuff, but when I finally talked to my wife and told her, and it's an emotional thing. You know, I think about God, who would I call right now? Mike Whitmarsh. Well, Mike Whitmarsh is no longer with us. Passed away in February of 2009. But that's the guy I would have called.
Yeah.
Where do I know him from? Why was he one of my best friends? AVP.
Well, this has been your world for so long.
You know, it's an identity for me that I'm proud of. It's not just like, hey, there's the AVP guy. I'm proud of being the AVP announcer guy or whatever. Oh, there's the guy that does warrant. Even if they know my name or not, or Ace calls me Peter, or whatever the case is, you know, it's an identity that I've been proud of. That, you know, and a lot of people have been a part of that, whether it's, you know, Jay Roche, who's my DJ, or Dave Taylor, DJ before that, or whatever the case is, Brandon Thompson, who was a stage manager. I mean, people like that are a part of that, and I was proud of it. So it's been really, really difficult. But I appreciate the support, and it has always overwhelmed me, Kevin, how many people do love this sport. People that I've never even met before, you're getting emails and stuff. And I always think that that's a cool thing where people do come together, and I hope that's what the Manhattan Open does.
You're going to have to find a new group of people to get to know really well, have be great friends, and friends forever.
I guess I'm going to have to hang with you clowns.
Hey, at least you have somewhere to be. You know, you, Millie, little Curious George. I thought Jason made a good point when talking about Canyon and talking about the needs of the organization. And Geeter, you touched on it earlier, that they just weren't cutting. They were on the right path, but they weren't able to cut fast enough. And Jason mentioned the tricky situation of having to cut costs and cut what you're doing while still meeting the obligations to your sponsors and to the contracts you already have signed that are bringing in the dollars. I think it's one of those things that people didn't really realize. You say, well, get rid of this, get rid of that, get rid of the stadium, don't do this. You really can't do that just without thought.
You have to sell. You have to sell our sport. You have to sell the sponsorships. You have to get that revenue, and it's a difficult time. And you know, I know you talked a lot about the U.S. Open of Surfing and how you know the differences between that and Nike putting their name on it and what that does. And you know, I think that's what our sport has missed these last couple of years. And one thing I want to say, you know, you read Hans' article, which was really well done, and all the blogs and the chat rooms. There's always going to be the blame game, and I think it's been a collective blame.
You can never lay it at the feet of one group or one individual entirely.
Absolutely.
But I think there are people that are more responsible
for what
has gone on.
Absolutely agree.
For what has gone on. So, and I want to get to that. I want to get to that and some thoughts about the future and what we think is going to happen in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break, get a drink of water. Again, wipe Dan down.
People can call in, too.
We'll get the cup man. We'll get the cup man.
Yeah. I think Rachel Scott's going to call in, but you know, it'd be good to hear from some fans, too.
Yeah, 347-677-1525. We've had a lot of people in here calling. We want to have some fans in here calling and tell us what you think. Great action on the chat board. Really good stuff. We'll be right back here on the Net Live.
Hate the gym? Well, we do, too. CrossFit South Bay is an elite strength and conditioning facility with a no-gimmick approach to fitness. The CrossFit program will have you running, jumping, lifting, climbing, and moving in dynamic and powerful ways. There are no machines, ellipticals, TVs, or mirrors. We train everyone from professional and collegiate athletes to soccer moms and retired teachers. With an average class size of 10, you get personal coaching and training. We sweat together, get fit together, and have a darn good time doing it. From beginners to weekend warriors to professional athletes, CrossFit South Bay is for anyone wanting to be in the best shape of their life. Visit us online at www.crossfitsouthbay.com and mention the Net Live for your 15% discount on any of our membership packages.
The now departed Alex Kelly, former intern here. It's like she never left. Of course, she left and then came back, but it's always nice to hear from her.
Was that the CrossFit commercial?
That was a CrossFit commercial.
I have my headphones off.
You're listening to Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We've had a big show so far. We talked to Jim McLaughlin, head coach at University of Washington, to preview some of our College Volleyball Weekly and got great information from him, both technical and about the upcoming season. I thought he was great. We talked a lot about the AVP. We had Jake Gibb call in. We just talked to Jason Hodel and Mike Dodd, both former employees of the AVP.
Sullivan snuck in.
Eric Sullivan snuck in just under the wire. Somehow he got on the show. God. Made Dan miserable because he brought up indoor, and Dan doesn't like that
at all.
That's
not even it. That's not even it.
Right, if you want to get in the show, 347-677-1525. I can't promise you we're going to refer to you by name later in the program that you called in, but we'll talk to you anyway. Now, listen, we have a caller. We like to get the callers whenever they get in the line. 616, you're on the air. Welcome to the Net Live. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Scott from Michigan. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, Scott. Thanks a lot for tuning in. What do you have for us?
Scott Vanderwerp, I believe. Is that Scott Vanderwerp?
Yeah, it's me, Gator.
Yeah, Scott, guys, is one of the original promoters of our sport. We used to do the Grand Haven and Muskegon events from back in the day.
Beautiful.
Unbelievable volleyball fan. His son plays and a great guy. So thanks for calling in,
yeah,
Scott.
Yeah, Steve-O or something. Yeah, it's a good play.
Yep.
Here.
Well, I just called in to let Mike and Jason know that we're in Michigan ready to go back to not the old school lines or the rules, but put together some of the events like we had in Michigan back in the day with 5,000-7,000 people roaming the beach, paying to get in, and interacting with the players. So, Peter, you're our first invitee. We'd love to have you back.
Nice.
And, we've got a committee together, and we're ready to go when they are.
I want to ride those coattails. Scott,
yeah,
we've talked
the Net Live out there.
We've talked a little bit about this, the idea of having kind of one-off tournaments. Would your area of the country be a place where you could feel comfortable and say, we're going to run a one-off tournament, we're going to try and get the best teams in the world, we're going to structure it, get local sponsors, have prize money, and it can really be great?
Absolutely. I think it has to be both, though. I don't think it can just be done locally. I think you have to use a combination of either, you know, obviously we're close in proximity to Chicago, where you could use maybe some of the old-style stuff where you got a pro rata share of a sponsor that wants to maybe pick five or six events that they're interested geographically in investing in, whether it be a I met with Mike in Long Beach, and you know, talking about whether it's a car dealer or not a car dealer, but a car manufacturer may want to say, yeah, we'll do one in Milwaukee or Chicago or Grand Haven, Muskegon, Cincinnati, and we'll do a regional, like you guys used to have Toyota out there, you know, in California, where they're making a regional investment. And then, you know, the biggest hurdle that I see is getting all the players on the same page, you know, because now obviously they're not under any contract, so now it's being able to make sure that you have the players to come to draw the crowds that you need, getting the Phils and Todds and Gary and Misty's and the people who are going to draw the fans out to make sure they're there. And so, but I certainly think that, yeah, doing a one-off, like the guys in Cincinnati have done a great job over the years in building a great fan base there. You know, we felt we did a good job in the mid-90s, late 90s, as long as they came here, doing a good job drawing the fans in. And I think that it can still be done again. I just think you have to I still think that they're really missing the boat. I think if you look at some of the things that the FIVB does successfully, I mean, Steve-O and I watched Todd and Phil work the Brazilians over pretty bad yesterday online, you know, HD online. They're not paying the big bucks for TV, and I know a lot of that's sponsor-driven. But
we're definitely going to continue to have some of those discussions, and Scott, we really appreciate you calling in and being a part of the show.
No problem. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Scotty. Appreciate it.
All right. We have a lot of callers. People are piling in right now. So we're going to get to a few more of those right now. Got, let's see. Who else? Got somebody. Looks like 111, but it could be Corey Glaive. Is that right?
Nah.
Is he in there? Dan Madden.
323, right?
Yeah, but it sometimes comes up as French fries. Is this Corey Glaive?
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
There he is.
It is Corey.
Corey, you are a lawyer and a man who has seen a lot of volleyball
not just
over
that,
the years. Yes.
This guy right here is guest 1700 on the chat board.
There goes my secret identity.
Oh, man. That's the guy who's been popping off and supporting Dan every chance he gets. I wondered who that was.
Not always.
Well, Corey, give us your thoughts on what's been going on.
Well, I think Mike had some good ideas of what was to change, and they were never put into place. I had talked to Canyon in Long Beach, and he had some of the same ideas of reducing the cost and get rid of that stadium that they were saying it's $100,000 per
spaceship.
Event.
The spaceship.
And it was – they ran out of time. And part of that is the AVP in the business world didn't have a good reputation coming out of the 90s.
Yeah.
Leonard made some great decisions, but – some of the people he sold the tour on felt like the bridges were burnt. So he left some problems. Jason came in, and I think he kind of said it best in the phone call. He came in to try to help out. Well, there wasn't anybody that was coming in to fix the problem, right the ship, get it going. And Jason's crew didn't have anybody that could sell the sport, where – Leonard could sell the sport, but he had burnt bridges and had, angered some people. So you had all these problems, and everybody looks to blame, and it's sort of like, okay, start learning from the past mistakes and the past successes. And I think that's what Mike was looking at and some of his ideas that you look at
that
you're going to have to go.
You make a good point about Jason. I thought he really got the idea that everyone had to work together. And Leonard, at so many instances, was at odds, whether it was the FIVB or USA Volleyball. Leonard was constantly fighting with people as to how the sport was going to be positioned, who was going to be in charge. Leonard wanted control of so many different things. And Leonard wanted to professionalize the sport. And I keep hearing people wanting to get back to the lifestyle aspect along with the sport. So I think there some of those errors lay at the foot of Leonard in his ownership before.
I think they do, and I think you can't have just one plan where it's all lifestyle or all sport.
Agreed.
In Florida and California, lifestyle sells. The sex appeal sells. In the Midwest, the Cincinnati event, I hear from people that are in the know there, and they're, you know, the parents, well, why do they have to wear such small bikinis? And it's more of an event. It's sort of like a tennis event. People go there to be part of the event and to see the sport. So I think you have to adjust based on where you're taking it, or if you're going to go with one formula of lifestyle, then make sure you take it to places that that lifestyle is acceptable.
Excellent. Hey, Corey, great points. We have a lot of callers. We want to talk to you more another time. Give us a call again.
We'll talk to you.
All right, guest 1700 signing off. Thank you, Corey Glaive. You know, a lot of people in the queue. The queue is absolutely blowing up. I know we're due to talk to Rachel Wachholder at some point during the show. Geeter, you're going to have to let me know via number.
Will do.
But let tell her to text too.
There's a 213 number in there, I believe. Jim Marico, longtime announcer.
Okay. 213, you're on the air. Is this Jim?
It certainly is. Good morning, gentlemen.
Jim, thank you for being a part of the show.
I've been listening in, first-time listener. I texted Geet this morning just to check in on him. It's been a tough time for everybody, guys, and I was fortunate enough through Chris and Mike Dodd to kind of be brought up back out of the attic, dusted off the old cigar store Indian to do some announcing with Chris while he was doing the TV. And, you know, I could just chime in and tell you that the disappointment that we all feel, guys, because of the familial relationship of traveling with all these guys, and for anybody that's listening out there, you know, my heart really goes out to our crew. And Geeter's mentioned them before, Brandon Thompson, and but all the road guys that manned the 18-wheelers, you guys, and were there, you know, working when Geeter and I would show up and do our thing, and were behind us breaking down when we'd leave the beach every day. And those are the guys that, you know, have diligently come back, some of them, you know, through a number of financial problems that the AVP had, left money on the table the last time we got in trouble, and still came back and worked so hard for us. So for those guys, listen, I just wanted to repeat what Chris said, that my hat's off to probably one of the hardest working crews in show business.
Jim, you mentioned the up and down and that a lot of people have been through it, been owed money, and still come back. Do you think the sport will come back yet again?
You know, I think so. There, like Mike said, it's so much fun to be part of that atmosphere once you're there. And Chris sampled it kind of when you know, he and I were announcing together towards kind of the twilight of my first part of my career when I was focusing on family and the practice of law. And you know, people would come originally for the bikini contest, especially guys in the Midwest. And, you know, this was before a lot of indoor ball was played, and they'd come to look at the guys playing a girl sport, quote unquote, and fell in love with the game. And they would go from Michigan, as Scott Vanderwerp said, who's, by the way, Geeter, right on for you guys taking this call. He's a wonderful guy, and I hope to go back there with him. We both saw him in Long Beach, and those are the kinds of people that you met along the way. And yep, these guys would go from Michigan to Cleveland to Chicago, and you'd see the same people at three events. They get hooked. And part of the hook was that you could see these guys play, the Tim Hovlands, the Mike Dodds, the Sinjin Smith, Randy Stokos, et cetera. And you'd also see them that night at the promotional events and could buy them a beer, or they'd buy you a beer, or you could talk to them. And love them or hate them, they were always available to you. And I think, you know, one of the messages I'd just like to get out real quick, guys, is, you know, I know that there's some discrepancy, and I understand about the rules and everything else, and being an old-school guy, Geeter, I kind of like the idea of playing on the bigger court, et cetera, but, you know, that's just a personal statement. But what I want to get to is I'm hoping that the players that are listening or aren't, don't have another event, an FIVB event or some conflicting event, you know, to go and give back to the sport a little bit this weekend. I know the city of Manhattan Beach, you know, has supported our sport for so long, and it's such a great crowd, and you know, I just want somebody who's deserving to be up on that pier to win an event like this. And I'm hoping that while there isn't a whole lot of prize money, I'm sure, or whatever, the prestige is still there. And to win the Manhattan Open is to win the Manhattan Open. And I think, personally, and I guess it's easy for me to say, but I think it's personally bigger than the money.
You know, Jimmy, we really appreciate you calling in, and just listening to your voice brings back so many memories, and you were and still are a great mentor for me. So thank you so much for calling in, man. We really appreciate it.
Great points. Good stuff.
Yeah, I love you guys, and Geet, much love to you and the fam, all right? We'll hang in there.
Love you, buddy.
Love you, too.
I hope Jim's a listener now.
Yeah,
be a
Jim,
listener. He's
so smart, too, by the way. I mean, he just speaks so well, and you know, he's got that great voice. appreciate you calling in. I know this is a rough time for her and her husband. Her husband's Sean Scott, and of course I'm talking about Rachel Walkholder Scott, two of the best players in the world that have been on our tour for a lot of years. You're talking. And just your thoughts on what's gone down the last few days.
Hey, dear, I just lost you for a second, so I don't know, it went out. But
I was just saying how great you are. I was saying
thank you.
No, just your thoughts on the last few days and what's going on in your household.
You know, both Sean and I are really bummed about the situation. I guess it for years. Our sport has gone through its ups and downs, and we've heard, you know, times before that the sport's in trouble, and, you know, but we've always bounced back and made it through, and even this time, kind of out of the blue when the AVP said, you know, this might be the last tournament, I still had total faith that it would be fine, because I guess just having played for so many years, having played internationally, just seeing the growth of our sport, and the popularity worldwide, I thought there's no way that this won't survive. You know, and with Misty and Carrie and Phil and Todd and their success and, you know, their celebrity status now, it's pretty amazing. Just that beach volleyball has become popular and big and known, and that we don't have a tour anymore. It surprises me, and it's sad because it's such a great sport.
You know, Rach, you and Sean having such a great year, both of you guys. You also have a new member in your family, Koa Daniel, your son, and I know you have the new house. So what's next for you guys? I know that's a scary thought, as it is for so many of us, but will you go back to international, or have you already been?
Well, you know, we've talked about it. Sean was supposed to go play in a couple of those FIVB events, and I was supposed to leave yesterday, and it ended up not working out. Still might go to the Netherlands. I'm waiting on that one. But for me, I don't know. You know, it's hard with having a son. You know, he's my first priority, and I'm definitely not leaving him, and I'm not sure how we'd be able to manage bringing him all over the world. and I'd be back in the country quota, and both of us. So, you know, that's why it is a great tour, but it also has its issues too, and the country quota is a big one. Just the fact that a team like Sean and John could not even get into a qualifier for a Grand Slam this year because they have no points, and they're the number two team in the U.S., like that's a problem, and that makes it hard for them to even get started over there. You know, I don't know what we're going to do. We originally, when I started the season, I thought this would be my last and that I would try and have another baby at the end of, you know, start trying in the fall. And then as the season progressed, I was having such a great time playing with Elaine and I was feeling so much better. And I really wasn't sure if I'd ever get back to where I was before. And I really felt like I was getting there. So we thought, you know, maybe we'll do one more year and then I'd retire and have another kid. So now that plan might be changing too, because if there's no tour, then, you know, and I still believe, I just feel like we have such a great sport. I think it's going to work out. I hope with everything.
Rachel, Kevin Barnett here. Thanks for joining us and taking the time. We had Jason Hodel on briefly, and he mentioned that they wanted to pay all their bills. Are you and Sean owed any money from the AVP at this point?
No, they paid us everything. We're all paid at, both of us.
From the player side of things, do you harbor any animosity towards the ownership or towards the management? Are players upset with that group, or do they feel like things were done and it just didn't work out?
You know, I feel bad for them. I mean, I do believe, I don't know Jason that well, but in my heart, I believe he's a good man. Like, my experiences with him, I think he really cared about our sport and that he had a good heart and he's a good person, and I trusted him, and I think he stepped into a tough situation, you know, an already struggling business. And I am a little bit angry, and, you know, I'd love to have a conversation with Nick Lewin just because, I don't know how you start a season. It's just, I know he's in a different situation than all of us. For us, this is our career. This is how we pay our bills, our mortgage. We have families. We have, these are our jobs. And for him to give that management such a short window of time to come up with money, that if there was no way that we could finish the season, that we didn't have enough money to complete it, it does bother me that we went into it not knowing that was a possibility. I mean,
we bought
a house a month ago. Like,
you feel like
bought a house.
And the ownership held back information that they already knew that the tour was going under because it didn't affect them at the end of the day. They can walk away from the property whole. And as you say, you guys have to deal with replacing incomes.
I honestly think, I mean, the people over there, Jason and Mike and Al and Ken, I don't think they would ever try and do something like that. I think they're very aware of our situations and they care about us. I believe that. I mean, Nick, to me, I think, I don't know him as well either, but he did to my face say, what, do I need to write a check in front of you guys? And I was like, that would work. I mean, he promised us all we'd be fine. I have the money. What are you so worried about? We're going to finish the year. So that I have a problem with. Like, I appreciate how much he's done for our sport and that he did invest a lot of his own money, but to leave us in this spot right now, and then to also promise to all of us in a meeting to our faces that he would have the money and we would be fine. Because this is a tough time. I mean, the economy is terrible, and for anyone to try and come up with that amount of money in that short of time, that's asking a lot. And
yeah.
I don't know what he was telling the AVP staff, but I know he's telling the players, like, we have the money, we're fine. I believe in you guys. I'm going to take care of this. It's going to be fine. So that I do, and I would love to talk to him face-to-face because, see, you know, he could explain to me what the situation was better. But
you want to meet
right
him
now, I think.
Do you want to meet him in a dark alley and tell him how you really feel?
I'm not afraid to tell people how I feel. Sometimes it gets me in trouble. But, no, I mean, I appreciate what he's done, but I'm also disappointed. I think he lied to us, and I think I don't know that he realizes – maybe just because he comes from a lot of money, but all of us, we work really hard for our money, and these are our jobs, and now all of a sudden we're all out of jobs, and it's not a good time to be in your mid-30s with no work experience and unemployed. You know, both John and I have been playing beach volleyball. That's been it for us. I mean, we've been lucky enough to call it our careers for 10-plus years. So it is, I'm a little bit mad. But I don't think the AVP knowingly did this. Sean's sitting next to me, yeah.
We would love to talk to him. Thank you so much for spending the time here on the show with us.
Yeah, no problem. And,
thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, you want to talk to Sean right now?
That would be great. Awesome stuff.
Okay.
Awesome stuff.
Bye.
Hello?
Sean, Kevin Barnett here with Geeter and Dan Madden. Thanks for joining us here on the Net Live.
Hey,
we really appreciate it.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
We know it's been a big shock to you, and what a shame for you and John, who have had really a great couple of seasons and a terrific run. Was this really a shock for you on Friday or back at Long Beach, or did you have inklings that this was going to be a problem, that the money was in question throughout the year?
Well, I think we all knew. I think, like Rachel said, throughout the years we'd always heard that the AVP tour was in trouble and financially was never really on super solid ground, but I didn't think it would come to this. I thought we would, you know, finish out the year, and then this off season would be a big question. But I thought we would be able to at least finish out this year.
So, what's the plan from here? I mean, Rachel mentioned that you and John, despite your greatness on the AVP, don't have FIVB points, so you can't get in the country quota. What's your approach going forward?
Well, we can't get in the country quota for the Grand Slam tournaments, but for a normal FIVB tournament, which is a bit smaller than the Grand Slams in terms of money and points, we could get in. So I originally was planning on playing the final two with Nick Lucena because Matt was coming back, but he hurt his quad, so now I don't think that's going to happen. I think John and I are going to sit down
and have to talk about it and see, you know, because it's going to definitely be a grind and take a toll to fly over there, play in the country quota. If we make it out of that, then also have no points in the qualification, would be matched up against, you know, probably a Brazilian team or another really good team internationally to make it out of that, to then be in probably matched up with Phil and Todd first round.
Yeah.
The double A-Lim tournament. So, I mean, we might have to do that for a few, and if we're, you know, good enough, we could fight our way out of that position. But right now, if there is no domestic tour next year, I know it's going to be even tougher internationally because you will have probably a few more teams that were playing on the AVP that will say, hey, like Aaron Wachfogel and Billy Strickland or A.L. DeMet, Mike Morrison might say, well, let's go play internationally. So it's just going to make it that much tougher to get in.
Sean, you're a veteran player. You're a guy who's been around for a long time and getting up there in years. Are you a guy at this point who looks down the road and says, I need to start another career because I have a family, I have a home? And does that drive you from the sport now if there is no domestic tour by next season? And do you think it's a similar situation for other players of your experience?
Definitely. You know, that's something that's a definite thought of mine is, Even if there is a domestic tour next year, you know, what is it going to be? Is it a group that comes in and runs something? Can I make a living? Can I support my family? You know, can I afford to pay my mortgage? So that those sort of questions are something that, like I said, as soon as we figure out what's going on, we have trying to see what's going to happen with the Manhattan Beach Open this weekend, see what's happening with the Cincinnati tournament. And I still may leave on Sunday for the Netherlands. But as soon as that's all done, then I'm going to sit down with John, have a talk with him, and see what we want to do going forward. And then also need to sit and talk with, you know, with Rachel and decide what's best for our family. But I mean, I'm playing well. I'm still healthy. I know I'm getting up there in years, but I'd love to go out on my own terms. And you know, we've been successful and playing well, so it's kind of hard to walk away now. But I do have to do what's best for my family at this point. So we'll see.
Sean, have you heard rumblings, or do you believe that there will be something next year, some sort of form of tour, whether it's a watered-down version or anything like that? Domestic?
I've heard rumblings, and I think there will be something, but again, what it is, I don't know. So, and you know, there's so many variables out there now. It's really hard to kind of make a decision. It's not like someone says, well, we're going to run this tournament, this tour, we're going to have this many events with here's the prize money. It's like right now I've heard, you know, I just don't know. For the younger guys, I think you'll have, you know, people who are working and playing part-time, they'll stick around and play in whatever's available next year. But a lot of guys or guys who are maybe older and closer to my position with a family and stuff may be driven from the sport, even though we don't want to leave at this point. And, you know, we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's hard to plan for a family and for a mortgage when you don't know what the next 12 months are going to look like. If you're a 22-year-old player, you're still on your mom's health insurance, it's probably a little bit easier.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, hey, Sean and Rachel both, thank you so much.
Hello? I think I just lost him.
All right. Thank
Sean,
you.
Take care, buddy.
Thank
thanks
you
for
both.
Coming on.
Okay, thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. All right, Sean Scott, Rachel Wachholder. You know, I have a plan. I sold my bamboo long poles here from on my lot. There's a lot of bamboo you see out the window right now. Sold those poles to a woman from Orange County who was building a bamboo fence that I met through a fencing company. Turned out to be Rachel's mom. So here's my plan. I'm going to cut down this whole thing. I'm going to clear cut the whole lot. It's my neighbor's, but I'm going to do it in the middle of the night. And I'm going to give those poles to Rachel and Sean, and they're going to sell them back to Rachel's mom. Make a ton of money.
I like that. You're always thinking.
Well, I think good stuff from the both of them. You can hear how much that really affects their lives. I mean, these are two players that have been doing very well and making a nice living on the AVP and enjoying the lifestyle and not going to the FIVB, and now they're kind of left in a lurch.
You know what concerns me, guys, is, you know, Rachel said that the players have gotten paid through Long Beach, but I know there's a lot of people that have not gotten paid yet, and that concerns me. You know, I've heard rumors the leverage agency that brought so much money to our sport, brought KFC, brought Nivea, you know, have not been paid a dime. You know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then there's TV people. So I know the AVP has to get that right, and I think that's what Jason Hodel and Mike Dodd are doing in that office. You know, they said that they want to make sure that these people get paid.
Right, there's pieces to be wrapped up. I mean, they say we're talking to you, Jason and Mike.
We can't just leave these guys without getting paid. I mean, you know, people brought – like Leverage brought sponsors to us that helped us have a tour the last couple of years.
Well, what happens to your contracts? You had sponsorship with Oakley and Rockstar, correct? We made a big deal about Kinda Good wouldn't sign you, so Rockstar had to.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought it was such a great call at the time, but, yeah, it's wrapped up in my AVP contract. So it's officially all over. You know, I'm going to have to go to the drawing board with them and see, you know, where I can wear their stuff and when and what visibility I can have and see if they'll do a deal. I think Rockstar's going to be looking at all the player contracts soon because, you know, now that this has happened, they need to – probably restructure some deals.
You hear a lot of talk from a lot of people calling in, the people who've done it in the past, Scott or Jim, or you talk to Mike Dodd, and the lifestyle issue keeps coming up again. It's something we've talked about on the show quite a bit. Is the lifestyle, is it a professionalized sport? And the lifestyle has to come back. I think one of the things that the AVP has to grapple with is that it's not a sport that supports itself. It's not a sport that supports a league. It's not a business. The AVP has never made money. We talked to Jason Hodel. It's never zeroed out at the end of the year and made money and been in the black. So what it is a great advertising vehicle. It has been a tremendous advertising vehicle. Whether you talk about Miller Lite, Crocs, Nissan. You know, I remember, I think it was 800 Call ATT when they were launching that years ago. I think that was around the AVP, if I'm remembering correctly.
Sunkist, yeah, lots of those.
Yeah, these people, and Dodd mentioned how much Miller Lite really cared.
Doritos Lite.
And how invested they were. How invested they were in the product of the AVP. And the reason they cared is because this was one of their major chunks of their brand, of establishing their brand, was this advertising vehicle that was the AVP. And the money that got kicked out to players and supported the staff and the announcers and the spaceship and everything else, that was just part of the advertising. That's not part of a sports league running.
Right.
That's part of an advertising budget that says this is what it takes to produce this ad, this rolling beach event ad for our company. That's where its strength lies.
Well, and this sounds like it's getting into an email that Reed sent earlier this morning when he, you know, talking about the U.S. Open of Surfing, where the U.S. Open of Surfing isn't really about the surfing going on in the water. It's about the atmosphere at the event in Huntington Beach, and it's just a gigantic advertisement for Nike 6.0, Hurley,
right,
and Converse. And that's fine.
Well, Nike 6.0 and Hurley are the same thing now. You know, Nike purchased Hurley.
And Converse. I think Nike owns Converse.
Do they own
as
Converse
well
now as well? Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I might not be right on that, but I think I am. Which is all that matters. But yeah, AVP hasn't... It's been Crocs or Nivea, you know. You know, I'm having trouble wrapping my head around this because AVP has kind of had that presence, that big sponsor presence. I just wonder if they're just spending way too much money. That's the problem.
Yeah.
They're spending way too much money.
Well, we have another caller, 347. First person I think ever to call from our own assigned area code. Yeah, 347, you're on the air here on the Net Live. Thanks for calling and give us your name. Oh, nobody. Got one
of these
phantom calls.
Did we call ourselves?
I don't know how we could have done that. Anything's possible with our technology, though. 347-694-21, so on. Let me give out your whole number.
Hold on. Millie wants another different. She wants a different George.
Another George.
Yeah,
it's been a couple hours.
Times,
well, 347. What a failure for our normal area code. Interesting. If you want to call in, I know we had a couple people drop off because we've had some longer calls. We've had some great stuff with Rachel Scott. We talked to quite a few other people. 347-677-1525. Give us a call back right now. Tell us about your thoughts about what's going on here on the show. You know, I have a few thoughts as I was thinking about what's going on here and the question we put on our Facebook page this past week, and you can become a fan on Facebook of the Net Live, was who's at fault? Now, Geeter, you said, hey, you can't assign blame to one person. Agreed. But you can have people that are more at fault than others. And I put out, is it ownership? Is it management? I think you have to separate those two entities. Is it players? Comments. I thought there were some good points made by a lot of people about that. And most people said the players are not at fault. I would mostly agree with that, but I thought there was one good point about the players in reminiscing about how it used to be. The players used to be available after the tournament. You'd see them in the local scene, the bars. And while I'm not a party guy, at least that accessibility I think is a positive, and I think some of that went away. Is that responsible for the death of the tour? I don't think so. Management. Jason Hodel is a man that when I met him last fall and talk to him about the sport and about the AVP and about the way things. I think Jason really gets it as to how it needs to work for the sport to be successful. And saying the right things and doing the right things is something I'm not privy to because I'm not in the organization. But when I talk to Jason, every time I've talked to him, I come away feeling like here's a guy that really wants to see the sport be successful and understand how it relates to USA Volleyball, to the FIVB, to volleyball at large, and how, you know, whether it's beach sand, all those things going on, that all boats rise. You know, with the rising tide, all boats will rise. And it wasn't just a go it alone. And I thought he was good. Really, for me, the guy that rubbed me the most the wrong way in this whole thing was Nick Lewin. We had him here on the show. I saw some emails from him to the USA Volleyball Board last fall when things were rough with the beach players. And really, I thought, here's a guy that doesn't get it. Here's a guy that's adversarial with everyone. Here's a guy that wrote emails to a professional board, an organization in USA Volleyball with a lot of smart people on the board now, a lot of people who are very successful outside of just sitting on the board of USA Volleyball, and wrote emails to them that could have been penned by me at the age of 21. Woefully immature, ill-informed, and self-serving. And I don't think that he really got what needed to be done for this to be successful. And I've heard all kinds of stories about the way he's acted, whether it's in the office or whether you watch him stomp around tournaments or the presence that he has in his own, or when you're around him. I don't like it. I don't think it's good. We had him here on the show. We interviewed him, and I thought a lot of people complained a lot about him being on our show, and I thought it was great because you got a feel for who he was or who he is. And his attitude on this show, I thought, stunk. I thought it was a horrible interview because he's saying things that are not appropriate for the owner of a sports league or property in the AVP. I thought it was garbage, and I put it at his feet. He's the owner. He writes the checks at the end of the day. You hear he's telling players, oh, I got it. I've heard that from lots of different sources. Oh, don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. Yeah, well, go back. Go back and sit on whatever money you got left. Great. Other people have mortgages. They have kids. They have no insurance. They have to scramble to do this other stuff, and you didn't give them any kind of warning. Not only that, but the property that you owned went in the ground. You should be disappointed about that. You should be bummed out. You should be disappointed in yourself. I've just never gotten that feel from him because things weren't good in the middle of the summer when we interviewed him, and it was like he was the king of the world. Sorry, dude, you weren't, and now it's evidenced by this collapse. Yes, Dan.
If this is a Jim Rome show, they would say rack him.
Nice.
Pound. Okay. You know, it's a quote I heard a couple times from a few people in the know, not necessarily just in the know, important people. Without Nick Lewin, the tour would have folded in 08.
Maybe so.
This was a year ago. Without Nick Lewin, the tour would have folded in 08.
Maybe so.
With Nick Lewin, the tour is going to fold.
Quotes to me, you know, saying that I beach volleyball is dead, so it can't ever die if it wasn't alive, that kind of stuff. Fine. There's quotes out there.
Did you say that, by the way?
I may have said it in so many words, but I don't think so. I'm not happy about this by any means.
Indoor.
This aggravates me that the AVP has gone under. But you look around, and here, I've got a quote from Ryan Morgan. I've got a quote from Mike Dodd. I've got a press release and quote from Doug Beal and David Schreff of USA Volleyball. Got quotes from Jason Hodel. Got quotes from players, and then I come to this. In its email to the players, the AVP said decisions about the tour's future rest with its majority owner, RJSM. Nick Lewin declined to comment. You just ran a tour into the ground that supports all these people from the television to the setup, to running ice to players, to trainers of players, to the players themselves, all this support staff, this property, and the office staff and the CEO and Mike Dodd and all these people that have jobs and are a part of this, and you have nothing to say for yourself? Step up to the mic, Mr. Proud Guy, the guy who was on this show with his brash confidence and, I got it, don't worry about it. I'm going to walk around with a bat and talk about how he kicked out Leonard Armato. Step up to the plate and say something when you failed, okay? Own your failure here, fella. Everyone else has something to say about it. Where are you?
I got nothing, man.
Should we go to commercial?
Holy crap.
I'm not happy about this. This is garbage that the AVP went under again.
See, Kevin does care about beach volleyball, and I appreciate that out of him.
You hear this, Hans? wow. You know, there's a link to a photo of Nick Lewin on the chat board that you might want to check out.
You know what? I'm going to put the Ghostbusters slash through that one. Since I got into trouble putting it through Karch, I'm putting it through Nick Lewin. That may not get the negative response that the last one got.
Where's Karch in all this?
It's a good question.
Karch is in Thailand.
Yeah, he's with the women right now. But where is Karch in all this? That's been a question I've had in volleyball for a long time. On the indoor side, too. And the indoor side was failing during my career.
He's doing the Corona wide open thing, and I know some players would... You know, I think players that I've talked to and friends of Karch are just kind of... You know, you want to hear a quote, something about the AVP, the tour that made, you know.
The only quote I've seen.
A lot of money. The only one I saw was the one that said, it's ironic that their model is broken and ours is working. So.
Right.
You know.
And I think that's unfortunate because you heard.
That's why I'd love to have Karch on to hear. I would like to hear from him and what he thinks. I mean, he's got to feel some ties. I mean, a lot of us are his friends. I mean, I consider him a friend. So I know he can't be happy about us going under and losing jobs.
He's famous because of the AVP. He's not famous because he won gold medals, at least to the level of fame he is, gold medals in indoor.
No, no.
Look, he'd be remembered in the world of volleyball for that, but he's famous because of the rise of the AVP and what he meant to that organization. He's the best player ever because of that.
And I know Jason Odell tried real hard to get Karch involved with the AVP, and I wonder if at the end of the day Karch didn't get involved because of Nick or what he thought about new ownership. I don't know. That's what I would love to find out.
You heard the characterization of Karch's little tour. I think it was Jake Gibb earlier in the program that, you know, said, look, people are going to be doing it for fun, not for a living now. And I think it was a point we made last week about the Corona Wide Open. Great, they have $8,000 prize for some of their tournaments. I know I haven't broken down all their prize money, but it's not on the same scale. It's not the same support that a professional player could expect. And you could reasonably say, I'm going to play on the Corona Wide Open. Even if I win every tournament, I'm going to make a living. It's just not the same.
Yeah, I mean, they split $5,000.
I think it was $8,000 at one tournament, which sounded pretty good. But
yeah.
If you won, you made $4,000. It cost you $1,000 to go. $3,000, you have to pay taxes. That's another $1,000. You have $2,000 left. It's not going to work. There aren't enough tournaments. It's just not enough.
And it would be tough for some of those guys that are going to play FIV and go back and forth. Say you're going back between FIV and Corona Wide Open. You are playing two completely different games. I know it's volleyball,
absolutely,
but you're using a different ball, using a different size court, different kind of scoring is different than the FIV. So those guys would have to make a decision. Ultimately, your decision is going to be, I have to go FIVB. There's more money. It's more prestigious. It's a shot to get to the Olympics.
So Corona Wide Open is not the solution to filling the hole of the AVP or continuing professional volleyball. It's out there. I think we've talked about it. It's fun. It's got some great sides to it. They emphasize the lifestyle, which I think is an important part of going forward.
Yeah, from what I hear, there's some great things going on. I mean, Aaron Walkpogel went this weekend and took a third, and I would love to get his take on this because I'm interested in it too. I mean, I've had a conversation with Berger since the AVP went down about helping him out the Manhattan Open that they're doing late September. So he and I have a meeting this week. I mean, there's, you know, obviously all of us in volleyball that still want to be a part of volleyball have to look at it.
Yeah, you got to look at it.
You know, and I want to look at it and really take a big, long, long look. And is this something I want to be a part of? Do I think the AVP is coming back? And that's where we're all going to have to make those decisions.
Yeah. What's the big deal? What's the problem? Old versus new rules. What's the problem here? Like, tennis plays on different surfaces. You know, everyone tries to compare AVP or beach volleyball to tennis. What's the problem with having like one, two tournaments or you know multiple tournaments on big court compared to short court? What if there's both? Yeah.
I don't see any problem with it. Okay, so let's get to us then. What do we think the future of beach volleyball looks like?
Oh, man.
Is it old rules? Is it current rules? Are there antennas on the court? Is it one-offs? Does a players' organization exist that represents players, provides insurance, benefits, maybe a loose group that pays dues, kind of like an AFTRA or a SAG, a Screen Actors Guild type thing, and then their members play in some of these tournaments around the United States or play on FIVB? Can something like that be supported? Does the tour itself come back under the AVP banner or another banner?
Why
to run an actual tour?
Why do we care about FIVB and why do we care about the Olympics?
Because the Olympics is the biggest deal going in beach volleyball. We've talked about this, why are Misty and Carrie famous? It's not from beach volleyball. It's from the Olympics.
Yeah.
But as great Olympics, as they are in volleyball.
The Olympics is not a beach volleyball tournament.
No, it's not. No, it's not. But it's a great way to get the name of your sport out there because you're on national television for, in the case of beach volleyball, prime time for nearly 2 weeks.
Correct. That works. Like, people know what beach volleyball is. Does it convert anything? I don't think so, because the most popular sports in the Olympics are the least popular sports in the United States. Basketball, no one watched that gold medal game at 3 a.m. in the United States. No one
right,
watched.
People
that
watch
game.
Different stuff.
Yeah, and it was an intense game. It was a 10-point game.
I actually
game.
Watched it because I was wide awake from getting back from Beijing, just laying on my couch.
But my point is, yeah, Misty and Carrie, Phil and Todd aren't famous because of AVP or what AVP has done or what beach volleyball has even done. They're famous because of what the Olympics did. I just don't necessarily think there's a correlation between Olympics and AVP or pro support.
I think if you bring the FIVB here, which has been talked about for a long time, and maybe this opens up a window because you have a lot more weekends to work with. If you make an FIVB event here, let's say in Hermosa, would it be huge? I think it would be, because I think you have the country aspect behind everybody, plus you still have the stars that people wanted to see on the AVP.
Yeah.
So now you have Phil and Todd. You have Jake and Rosie. You have Nicole and Misty, if they're still together. You have Misty and Carrie if they get back together. Or, you know, whoever those stars are in the beach, they'll play here. Plus you have the aspect of we're going to defeat Russia. We're going to defeat the Brazilians. You can set up some of that interplay and sell it that way.
Well, is that sustainable as an American property? Like, we're talking about an American.
It's a one-off. Tour. Again, yeah. It's a one-off.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's a one-off event, but then you also have a qualification thing that could be built. I think USA Volleyball, I've said before, may have to step into this space in a way that they have not in the past.
Oh, no.
I know you don't like that, Dan. You have your problems with USA Volleyball. I know that, but they control the qualification for the Olympics. Bottom line.
Yeah, that's fine. Whatever. But, like, we... You guys talk about, you know, especially with Reed here, talk about all the qualification to get the world to world championships, to get the Olympics, to get all these different tournaments. I can't keep track of any of that. I don't care. I just want a tour. You know, I don't want just like separate little tournaments that contribute to points for some other thing going on in another country and then some World League thing.
You want something that you own emotionally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me play a little devil's advocate just for a moment, Dan, okay. Because I'm with you. I want a domestic tour.
Yeah.
I want the AVP tour because I see its value and I see what it's done and I see how wonderful it's been and I grew up watching it and being a part of it. But the Olympics, I love the Olympics.
Yes.
I got to go to the Olympics and I think it's a huge part of what makes
the best 2 weeks
beach
of
volleyball.
The year.
Yeah, there's no question about it. So I think, you know, us having a strong domestic tour, but then also having some qualifying events that will lead up to the Olympics or you know, I think about the heightened pressure and visibility that would give, because I think people around the country that aren't diehard beach volleyball fans see Olympics attached to it, or, oh my God, this is an Olympic qualification, then they get interested because for those 2 weeks they got their USA jerseys on and they're a big part of it. So I think they do go hand in hand.
For very, very short period of time, for instance, the week after the Olympics in 2008, Cincinnati went off.
Cincinnati goes off every year.
And they capitalize for 1 week. It's like it's a very short string there.
You don't want to be a sport that's only relevant every 4 years.
No, I agree with. Exactly.
Indoor volleyball.
Beach volleyball.
But I think we were relevant for many years. I mean, not in the grand scheme of things like baseball and basketball and football.
No, get away from that.
But we're relevant.
Yeah.
There's a big volleyball community out there.
For sure. But when you're talking sponsors and stuff, sponsors are talking about getting on TV. They're also saying, we want Misty and Carrie. Why do they want Misty and Carrie? Because of the Olympics, because they're famous and marketable because of the Olympics, and they have those sponsorships. But when Misty and Carrie are gone, women's volleyball is in a very, very big hole. Because after Misty and Carrie, what is there? There's Jen and April, and no one knows Jen and April.
I wish I knew Jen.
You know, when I met some of the Brazilian guys for the first time last year, because I know Emmanuel and Ricardo and some of those guys, but when they came over for that USA-Brazil challenge, Harley and a couple of those guys,
they
came up and knew me because of the AVP and came right up and talked and said how they would love to play on the AVP. Like, a lot of those people from around the world originally started watching beach volleyball or got into it because of the AVP. I know that's hard for people to in our country that haven't been outside of it to watch volleyball to fathom, but it's true. I'll never forget Julius Brink. He's 24, 25 years old at the Olympics in Beijing. I met him at the Oakley facility, and he recognized me from AVP Classics.
Nice.
And then made a rundown of all eight shows and then told me 20 other shows we should have. You know, that to me was – it baffled me.
Well,
you know, I mean, having a strong domestic tour, the AVP tour, is vital for us to win gold and to be relevant in the sport of beach volleyball around the world. No. I was just looking at you because I either can look at you, Curious, George, Miller, or Kevin, and I happen to look at you.
Well, thank you.
Dieter, I think you're right. I think the sport needs a domestic tour. I think that the indoor side would do well to have a domestic tour, or domestic league, really, domestic league here in the States. But on what level, I don't know, and now the AVP is in that same question. On what level will it come back? Because Jeff Nygaard a couple weeks ago made a good point. Up or down, AVP fails, AVP keeps going. Things still happen. Beach volleyball still exists. The Manhattan Open will go on this next weekend. Cincy, word has been since all this broke loose a few weeks ago, is that it will happen. I think Chicago's strong enough. So it will find its way. The question is how.
Kevin, can I ask you a question? Because I value your opinion and you're a partner of the show. And I always think you have a good view from someone looking outside. Obviously, Dan's a huge beach volleyball fan, and I'm so tied in with the AVP that sometimes it's hard for me to look outside that box. So I want to ask you this question.
I like how you buttered me up. Keep going.
Can the AVP be successful when there's no unity from around the country in beach volleyball in terms of Corona Wide Open, Toyota Tour, USA Volleyball, everyone always looking for power, looking for control? Can we all exist and all be relevant and be important, or do we have to be one?
It's an interesting question.
Because I've gone around it in my mind a million times. There's a part of me that goes, how are we ever going to be what we can be for so many different levels of volleyball? But then I also say, it's kind of cool that a lot of people are playing it and doing it their way. Because at the end of the day, I always thought the AVP was kind of number one in terms of like Phil Todd, Kerry. I mean, you know where the best teams are.
I think you've hit it, and I'm of two minds because, yeah, exactly that. If there's a bunch of people fighting to be the number one, and that's how they purport themselves, is to be the number one, and they have personalities involved that would make them look like they're the number one. That's maybe part of the problem with Corona Wide Open. Is here's Karch, the best player ever, the most identifiable player in the sport, not in any way associated with the best players of today who are on a different tour. I think that's a problem. If you have a situation where you have an entity, say it's the AVP, who's the premier tour, best players, best people, the history, the Dodds, the Hovlands, the Karches, all those guys involved and named and you know, as the history and brought back in that manner, and along with Phil, Todd, Misty, Carey now, that's better if you have that and then you have some other stuff going on that's just AAU style. It's supporting of it, or it's the D-League, or it's the other supportive part of volleyball. But the end goal is always for anyone on that tour to join the AVP tour to get to the highest level, because I think you see that in other sports. It's not like there's the NBA and there's nothing else. The NBA spawns a million other basketball. What it takes is somebody establishing that. Because there's going to be a fight, and I hope there is a fight, really. I hope there is a fight, and there are people that really think they can do it, multiple people that value it, that believe in the sport, believe it's going to be successful, and try to do it. That's one of the things Reed was kind of questioning is, really, is it viable? Is it really viable? Because it's been not viable now, what, three times?
You know, and that's the thing. I think you make some great points. And when I think about where the tour is going to come back and where it's going to be and what needs to work, I don't know if that involves me. And I don't know if the Corona Wide Open will involve me. And that's why I'm going to look at it. AVP for my first 4 or 5 years of it, I was also a teacher and an athletic director. It wasn't until I got into television broadcasting and the TV side of the AVP that I was able to quit teaching and focus on being a TV broadcaster. You know, if it comes back, are we going to have 8 tournaments and no television? Is there a spot for me on that? You know what I mean? Like, if it comes back at that level, cool. But, you know, I think we've kind of already been to a spot where it's going to be hard to go back. but we're going to have to maybe start over again. And where does that leave the players? Where does that? Who are the next stars? Are there stars in our game coming up?
It's going to be an interesting effect 5 years down the road because we talked to Sean Scott, guys like Sean Scott, John Hyden, who are at the top now. If they fade away, because you have to find something else to do, you have to find another way to make money, so you have to make that choice. Do I stick it out with this unknown, or do I get off the tour? There's going to be a lot of those guys. Then you also start to affect your pipeline because there's nowhere to be. And sand volleyball may fill that, or sand volleyball may now be now get killed because the professional tour doesn't exist. That was the big drive. Look, we have a professional tour. We're this, we're that. Well, that's gone.
Yeah.
So does that dry up, and now you have no pipeline, and all of a sudden your sport is right back to where it was. The recreational beaches of Manhattan Beach and the Manhattan Open goes on, but it's really not anything beyond that.
Yeah.
Are we at that point?
I just feel so naive through this whole thing, to be really honest with you, and I know we've talked about it on this show. I've been a part of it for so long and been and built up my lifestyle and what I'm doing. And I know that in the fall, I do football for Fox and women's volleyball for ESPN. I know in the winter, I'm going to do basketball for Fox and whoever else will take me, maybe ESPN. But I always knew come springtime and come summertime that I was volleyball for 6 months. And all my employers knew that, and that was the bread and butter, and that was where I was going to be. And now I look and I go, what are you going to do for those 6-7 months?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where does your life go here? And is it time to just say goodbye to volleyball? Because Nick Lucena used to always go, you're going to leave forever. You know, you're going to go on and do this and do that. But I always thought to myself, why? Marlo always came back to volleyball. You know, I will always come back to volleyball. I just thought it would be there forever, and I think that's what Rachel was saying, and we kind of said that last night. I was with Rachel, Carey, and Sean, and my wife, and a couple other people, and we're like, we just thought it would – we never really, really thought it would go away.
You got so accustomed to it maybe going away that you just feel, oh, it'll never happen because it hasn't happened.
Believe me, and Barney, all 13 years, there's been turmoil.
Right.
I've always wondered if it's going to go away. I mean, let's be honest. There's probably a couple years there when Leonard had it where you thought it was secure, but I always thought it was going to be there. And now the reality has hit a ton of people that this is gone, and I don't know if it's coming back, and if it does, at what level.
Well, we got a couple more callers. The 305 getting in with a couple of calls. 305, you're on the air. Welcome to the Net Live.
Kevin, Dan Geeter, glad to be back. It's Rudy from Miami.
Rudy.
I just had to say, about these tours, all these different tours, just to backtrack a little bit, that are going on around the country, the Corona Light Tour. We have one in Florida that just goes around domestically around the state. They could exist together, but there needs to be some sort of communication. I remember when AVP came down to Fort Lauderdale. Half the people that I know that wanted to go were either playing a different tour at Siesta Key that weekend across the state or playing somewhere else. And you're never going to get a large crowd at one of these events when these different tours are trying to schedule the same thing in the same places at the same time.
Yeah, it's a good point, Rudy. Thanks for chiming in.
Yeah, take care, guys.
All right. That's a good point. It happens on the indoor side, too. You're trying to run an event with the indoor national teams somewhere. Qualifier. They've had to go somewhere else for an event, and that happens quite frequently. I think that's an interesting challenge, and you can't please everybody, but certainly there has to be increased cooperation between the tours. All right, another 305 caller. Welcome to the Net Live.
Yes, a little bit of basketball. I don't know if you speak that. Do you? Hello?
Basketball?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk.
God.
Yeah, the Raptors and the Jets or the Nets are going to be playing.
All right. What is that all about? The Raptors and
I think
the
that
Jets.
Was like a Coming to America. He was trying to do a spoof of America.
I don't either.
Eddie Murphy.
Man.
If you're going to do that, just do the barbershop
scene.
That's
right up there with the guy calling
do
about.
Do the barbershop scene.
Netball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good gracious.
Yes, we're going to try to do Eddie Murphy.
All right, we're gonna wrap things up here,
dude,
but
Joe
I have one last question.
Of all time. Better Sugar Ray?
I feel like we've hit the AVP pretty well, and I have one last question. Given that the Manhattan Open is going this next weekend, Reed was of the opinion when I talked to him last night, too bad he couldn't join us, but he might be done with practice by now, that anyone winning this Manhattan Open with old school rules, no antennas, if the top players aren't there, shouldn't have their name put on the pier.
What?
That was Reed's opinion. Their name shouldn't go on the...
Whoever wins this Manhattan Open, 50th anniversary, whether the top pros are there or not, it's what's happening. The only Manhattan Open we're going to have, unfortunately, that's the reality. If you win, your name goes on the pier.
The AVP started in 1983. That's not 50 years ago, at least I hope not. And the city of Manhattan Beach runs this. They've run it with the AVP. They've run it without the AVP. It's their thing.
Their name goes on the pier, my opinion.
Sean Scott and Pepe De La Hoz have their name on the pier from the year that 98 or 2000. 99.
And Reed's reasoning was these won't be the best players, but Sean Scott, I don't know, pretty good on the AVP now. So
I don't care.
It's a one-off tournament. I think your name goes on the pier. I think Reed produced the minority.
This is the Manhattan Open.
And Reed made the argument to me about a thing called Operation Gold, which was a USOC-sponsored program that said if you finished in the top three in your world championship for the year, you got, I think it was $15,000, $10,000, $5,000, first, second, third, as a bonus for finishing in that position. Well, the United States indoor team did it. They finished, I think, oh, it was for one of the events prior to the Olympics. They finished third or second in World League or something, whatever tournament it was that was qualifying that season had been identified as the qualifying event. And they went to collect the money. The USOC said, oh, no, sorry. Four of the top five teams in the world have to be in the tournament, so we can't pay you. And I sat in the boardroom with the USOC and said, are you joking me? I think I had maybe expletives, but it was a mixed company. Are you kidding me right now? So there was this program. You said, here's the tournament. If you do well in the tournament, you're going to win this money. Then you come back and say, oh, no, we have a rule that says you have to have X number of teams in the tournament. No way. Whoever shows up in the tournament shows up in the tournament. I can't control it. The team can't control it. Who's going to be there? The players in Manhattan cannot control who's going to sign up or not going to sign up. I don't care if the best teams are there or not. You play in the event. You win the event or you finish in that event. You get the money or you get the pier.
Some of our best teams sometimes go to FIVB Grand Slams and miss AVP tournaments. If you win the AVP tournament for bringing the center 1-1 without Phil and Todd there,
yeah,
you still get an open win.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You win the Open, the Manhattan Open. I think your name gets on the pier. I mean, everyone's invited this week. It's not like they're keeping Phil and Todd out or those guys.
It's
so
open.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if Nadal's hurt, if Nadal's hurt at the French, they're still going to play the tournament.
Golf tournaments, tennis tournaments, they don't always have the best players in those tournaments, but they count as wins.
They count as wins.
Barney, what's going on in here, dude?
Max is kicking stuff down the stairs. That's my younger
son. Can we give Millie a little credit that we're 2.5 hours in? And,
she's killing
and,
it.
And
my boys, too. I've only had one incident.
Those guys have been great. And when you stood up and yelled at them, they they came too. I know who runs this household.
It's like roaches scattering.
Yeah,
and I've been on my best behavior.
We haven't had to throw you out.
Except for when Sullivan called up. But
yeah,
I think
Sullivan
was,
did text and say, "Dude, what's Dan's beef with me, bro? What's his problem?"
Nothing with him.
He didn't know if he like yelled at you across the net because Sully was just an absolute ass when he used to play.
Yeah,
hated the guy when I was in Northern. Now he's a great friend, but
a little older than me.
Yeah, no, I said no. You know,
he's
Dan.
A problem.
Dan just when Hodel's on the line and you're calling in to talk about Nebraska volleyball, he's going to freak out.
Well, guys, I say it every week. It's been a great show. I mean it this week.
This has been an emotional show and a sad one, but we had our most listeners. I can guarantee you that. We had great, great time on the chat room. I mean, we had 129 guys at one
great
time.
Great call-in. You're going to make yourself. Do you have enough fuel in the car for next week?
Man. Yeah, that was a low blow. I'm going to go to Chicago with Carrie and Brooke and Phil and Todd. I'm going to work for Barefoot Wine and do the Barefoot Championships the weekend of Chicago when the AVP was going to be there. Not sure if I'm going to go to Cincinnati, but the week after I start football on Friday nights, play-by-play for Fox and lined up ESPNU women's volleyball games. So I'm going to get after it, man. I've met with my agent twice, and I'm moving forward like the sport of volleyball is no longer going to be, but of course you guys know where my heart is, and if it comes back, then I'll be a part of it in some capacity.
You'll still be here.
I'm going to be here on Mondays for sure.
Nice, nice. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you tuning in here to the Net. The next going to be a fun weekend of lots of stuff for us, but then come Monday we're on college. That's what it's all about.
Matt said, "Hold on real quick. Curious George is the title sponsor of this show." That's great. 132, by the way, was the top guys. 132.
Very good. Very good. So we're going to kick off next week. We're going to get into college women's, and we'll definitely have more as this stuff continues to shake. We'll talk more about them. We missed them this week. We're looking forward to talking to my broadcast partner, Paul Sunderland, next week about that broadcast, and I'm sure he'll have some thoughts on the history.
Are we
going to
bump Sunday again? We're going to get him
on
this time.
No way. Sunday's coming on. I hope he listened a little bit today because he's always asking me questions about the sport, and I say, Sunday, if you listened to the show on Monday, you wouldn't have to ask me this. because I'm going to see him on Wednesday.
Let's get more listeners to this show.
Tell your friends.
Are you going to be able to get off on Mondays, or do you have to go in? Is this your last show?
My boss is on the chat board. He just told me to get back to work.
Lindsay Breeden, Dan needs to work Mondays from 2 until 10.
Yeah, come on, make him come in on Saturdays. Come on.
Yeah, that's a great option.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for being here. It's been another episode of The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We'll see you again soon. Be good.